Good morning and welcome to the Board of Supervisors this morning. Would everyone please rise and join me in the flag salute? Thank you. Yes, may we have any changes to the agenda, please?
Changes on today's agenda is added items on consent B16, a request from Behavioral Health to approve an amended contract clerk's file with Dale McGee doing business as Catalyst Consulting, increasing the contract amount by $19,000 for increased project management consulting services in regards to the Community Services and Support Plan part of the Mental Health Services Act. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign. Item B17 is a request from the library to approve a 5-year lease agreement with the Lucia Marr Unified School District to establish a 1,400 square foot library at 1551 17th Street in Oceano. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign. Item B18 is a request from Planning and Building to approve 13 agreements clerk file for special services by independent contractors for inclusion in the county's environmental studies standby roster for the preparation of environmental impact reports and other environmental documents, all districts. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign. B19 is a request from Public Health to approve one, an annual renewal application clerk's file with the State Department of Health Services for the California Health Care for Indigents Program, CHIPS, for fiscal year 2005-2006, and two, authorize the Public Health Department Director to execute the corresponding subsequent standard agreement and description for proposed expenditures report from the CHIPS allocation. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign. Added items for closed session under pending litigation and existing litigation is added number 11, Gulf Insurance versus the County of San Luis Obispo. Amended item presentation is A1, adoption and presentation of a resolution commending Doreen Liberto Blanc for her service as Planning Commissioner for District 2. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign. Staff is requesting this resolution for this item be amended and the replacement is attached. Additionally, staff is requesting that this item be moved from presentation to the consent agenda and be renumbered as B20. Amended item consent B3 is a request to approve a contract clerk's file with Mead and Hunt in the amount of $245,000 for design and engineering services on projects in the San Luis Obispo County Regional Airport. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign. Staff is requesting this item be amended by replacing the transmittal page and staff letter and amending them to request authorizing from the Director of General Services to submit the grant application for allocation of funds from the FAA AIP program. All the requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirements. And those are all the changes today.
Thank you very much. Because our presentation calendar was removed and put on the consent agenda, we have no presentation.
Full approval of the presentation?
Second.
Well,
we don't have one.
It was moved.
Okay. I thought we weren't going to read it here, but you were going to take it.
I will be taking it, and it's on the consent agenda, so it will be approved this morning, and then I will take it to the... Doreen was unable to make it this morning, so I will take it to her party that she will be having, that I will attend. Okay. With that, we go to...
We'll give her the extra oomph by supporting it separately from the rest of the calendar to show our appreciation.
Oh, that's what you want to do? with that, we will go to public comment. And... I would remind everyone that when you sign these yellow forms, you should read what it says, because it states that no person will be permitted to make slanderous, profane, or personal remarks against any individual. And the reason for that is that one making personal, slanderous, or profane remarks lowers the level of civil discourse to start out with, and then, and this is my personal opinion, verbal abuse does not equate to freedom of speech. And furthermore, it's boring. You know, you get tired of hearing the same old stuff over and over and over again. So with that, the first request to speak form is Sharon Frederick, followed by Joyce Albright.
Good morning, Board of Supervisors. My name is Sharon Frederick, and I'm a local resident of Los Osos for 15 years. And I'm especially here to thank Shirley Bianchi for having the courage to speak the truth. In the Sunday Tribune, in the local section, David Sneed did an excellent question and answer article entitled Sewer Plans Fate Up to the Voters, while indicating what recall supporters and candidates promise to do if successful. It quotes regional and state water quality officials on the consequences of delay. Noel King, Director of Public Works, and Supervisor Shirley Bianchi state the county would be forced to take over the sewer project. Bianchi is certain that the treatment plant will be built at its current in-town location if the county took over the project. The perception that the September 27th election will result in a clear direction of our future is false, because the legal and financial difficulties associated with continuing or stopping the project remain. But what exactly have opponents or the two dissident directors offered as an alternative project, and what is their plan to fund a project and navigate with state agencies? It's time they provided answers. But since they haven't, take a look at what they aren't saying. We've heard a lot of talk about a regional plant. This is a regional political football. It is simply not realistic to expect the citizens of Morro Bay and Cayucas to buy into such a large project with potential high cost risks. Such a plan would require a pipeline between Los Osos and Morro Bay. Imagine environmental issues to construct a pipeline along the estuary over the foothills near Hollister Peak. Such a pipeline would cost in the tens of millions of dollars. We hear talk of an out-of-town plant. Los Osos cannot simply dictate that a plant can go wherever it pleases. EIRs, easements, land acquisition, and permits will create delays and add more cost. Potential sites out of town have their own environmental concerns associated with piping of sewage and plant spills. Ponds. We hear a lot about talk about ponds. The district engineer has stated that a pond system that cannot meet the nitrate reduction requirements of the state has not been demonstrated. Plain and simple, believe the opponents or believe the district engineer. Regardless of how one feels about the LOCSD and our difficulties in learning to govern and create a wastewater treatment system at the same time, it is important for the voters to consider the long-term ramifications of taking the drastic step of a recall and stopping the projects. Opponents of the current project.
Ms. Fredericks, your time is up.
Okay, thank you. Please vote no on B, C, D, and E.
Joyce Albright, followed by Eric Greening.
Good morning, Honorable Board. My name is Joyce Albright. I bring you warmest greetings from my Los Osos neighbors, most of whom are wholeheartedly against the recall of LOCSD board members Gustafson, Hensley, and LeGros. We don't support Directors Schicker and Tacker and are not happy with their behavior at your meetings. It is our desire that Los Osos maintains a strong, healthy, friendly relationship with your board and apologize for any offensive behavior they may display. I want to personally thank you, Shirley, for supporting our efforts. With your assistance, it is our expectation that we will be able to continue the construction process. Restarting at another location with another project could only be more expensive. In 1984, the cost was $34.6 million. Today, it's $150 million. Prices simply do not go down. Each of the 13 wastewater studies completed since 1984 have investigated multiple alternative technologies, collection systems, treatment, disposal, and locations. Another ponding system is being touted, this time by a Canadian firm. It didn't work before and won't fly this time. A recall candidate has admitted this company has never installed such a system in California and that it can't meet the RWQCB's certification requirements regarding resolution of our nitrate problems. PG&E holds the easement on the Andre site, which expressly prohibits erecting any buildings on other structures within the easement. As to the purported three willing sellers of other properties outside of town, have recall candidates informed the electorate of how long it will take to rezone this land, to go through the ESHA, archaeological and permit processes, to obtain the Regional Water Board's approval? At least 6 years and many, many more dollars. This is our last chance at the low-interest loan. It is for this project and this site only. And election of new LOCSD directors does not change these requirements or buy more time. If just one of the recall candidates is elected, the entire project will be shut down, forcing the county to take over and put the same project at the same place for more money. Please, Los Osos citizens, get out there and vote no on B, C, D, and D. Thank you.
Eric, thank you for your comments. Eric Greening, followed by Mark Phillips.
Good morning. I'm Eric Greening, not from Los Osos. I'd like to address a couple of actions you took last week. First, I'd like to thank you for the response to public comments on the need to learn from the response to Katrina. I've been given to understand that an agenda item to review our own emergency response plans is tentatively scheduled for November 1st. I'm very grateful to see us take advantage of the opportunity to learn and improve. Another action you took last week was to indicate an intention to update the 31-year-old conservation element of our general plan and to incorporate the water master plan into this. I am thankful for this and believe it is an excellent idea. You also encouraged the Water Resources Advisory Committee to take new and larger responsibilities in relation to the conservation element. I'm only one member, but I'm certainly willing to rise to the challenge. We need to look into creating other committees to oversee other important parts of the conservation element. I would specifically suggest convening a Biological Resources Advisory Committee and a Cultural Resources Advisory Committee. We would then have the rack, the brack, and the crack. I don't know if we will be able to assemble a level of diversity and expertise for these new committees that is found in the rack, but it is worth trying. The biological committee should include at least one of the following: a marine biologist, a limnologist or freshwater ecologist, a terrestrial botanist, and a terrestrial wildlife biologist. Other stakeholders can be included as appropriate. The cultural committee should include Chumash and Salinan representation, archaeologists, historians, and I believe a case can be made for specialists in paleontology, unless that belongs in the BRAC, and in identification and protection of living cultural landscapes. I recognize that actual work on the conservation element is some months away, but it's not too early to begin conceptualizing these committees so that positions on the committees can be delineated, members can be recruited and seated, and the committees can begin work on needed inventories and priorities in advance of actual production of the element. The RAC has the advantage of a long track record as it moves into the new challenges associated with creation of the conservation element. The new committees may lack RAC's history, but I would hope they could match its sense of purpose and could also rise to the considerable challenges that will come before them. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments and your humor. Mark Phillips, followed by Lisa Schicker.
Good morning. My name is Mark Phillips. I'm from Atascadero. And today I'm asking this board to instruct the Health Commission to produce the process and rationale that was used to create the Health Commission's genetically engineered task force. For over a month, I have tried unsuccessfully to obtain documentation on the criteria for selecting members and for the topics that would be covered on this task force. Several months ago, I asked this Board of Supervisors to support a resolution I had drafted along with the members of GE, SLO GE Free, in support of efforts to make labeling of genetically engineered foods mandatory. I was told to take up the issue with the Health Commission's GE Task Force, which I did in mid-August. The argument I made at that time is included with a copy of these remarks, which I gave to the clerk. Unfortunately, the GE Task Force has said that their mission statement and rules that the mission statement and rules provided to them by the Health Commission state that they will not take a position, pro or con, on whether the county should have legislation on genetically engineered foods and crops. I argued that taking no position on labeling was de facto support for the status quo and thus sided with the GE industry, but to no avail. I was told that the legislative committee would be the appropriate body to consider labeling legislation, but when I asked how they, the legislative committee, would know how to proceed if the GE task force was not making any recommendations, no answer was provided. Essentially, I was told that these were the rules and that is that. My experience with the GE task force has also exposed an apparent bias in the committee's members. While people who openly questioned the wisdom of genetic engineering, like Health Commissioners Dr. Don Pinkel, Penny Chamousas, I may be pronouncing that wrong, and Pam Hetherington, were denied a seat on the committee, Scott Steinmuss, Michael Broadhurst, and Robbie Robbins, all very vocal supporters of the genetic engineering and anti-Measure Q supporters, during last year's campaign, they were granted seats. Perhaps the Health Commission guidelines for selection would explain why the task force appears to be so unbalanced. Due to the lack of transparency so far, as well as other possible financial conflicts of interest, we are considering, and I underline the word considering here, filing a formal complaint with the grand jury should the Health Commission refuse to address this request in a timely manner. We don't want to go that route. We'd just like some answers to what we think are some very legitimate questions, and we're asking for your help in that. Thank you.
And thank you for your comments. Lisa Schicker, followed by John Fouché.
Good morning, Board of Supervisors. My name is Lisa Schicker. I'm a CSD director in Los Osos. Thank you for allowing my comments this morning. I'm here to talk about four things this morning. The first one is that we do have a plan. And I encourage you to watch public television, and I encourage you to look at the websites if you are concerned that we don't have a plan. We wouldn't have come this far if we didn't have a plan that would work. We're very concerned about the costs. In this county alone, there are two sewer plants being built right now for $13 and $17 million. Ours is $46 million. That doesn't include land or building or mitigation costs. We know it can be done cheaper, and we want it done cheaper for the people because we don't want them to have to leave. So please be assured that we do have a plan. Secondly, back to staging areas, as last week I brought up. I'd like to show you some pictures, and I gave the supervisors each a copy of this picture. This is what's going on in the neighborhood staging area that I keep talking about. I've written your staff a long note last week. I have received no response from your staff. I have received response from Mr. Monowitz, but I have not received response from your staff about the staging area and the lack of local permits that are required to put a staging area in a neighborhood. I'm not sure any of you have seen the staging area. It's 7 acres of staging area and commercial operations with no local permits. There are gas tanks on stilts. Very important. There are some safety issues for a neighborhood. I really would encourage you to ask your staff to please look into the local permits that are required for putting commercial operations in a residential neighborhood without any permits. Not the coastal permit. I have my answer from Steve Monowitz. It's local permits that I'm concerned about, and I need your assistance. The third thing I want to talk about is a bond that was issued last week. According to Mr. McNulty, your staff attorney, the bond's okay with you, but it allows restoration of three sites in Los Osos. The bond was purchased by one contractor. We have three contractors. Two of the sites, he has no responsibility for at all. How will this guarantee that this work will be restored at those sites? He has no responsibility for it at all. That's the Broderson leach fields and a staging area. Yet he purchased the bond on behalf of the CSD when you requested that the CSD purchase the bond. Please look into this. I am concerned that we will be held out to dry if the election changes course of the events next week. And fourthly, about two plans that were submitted to your staff, both the groundwater management plan and the saltwater intrusion report. Both of those plans indicate that this current project will not solve the problems. Vacant landowners can't build. Cabrillo may be hung out to dry if they want to hook up. There's no room. There are lots of problems why this plan is not going to work. You have the reports. You are involved because you are the land use authority. And I encourage you to please read those reports because they do indicate that this project does not solve the groundwater problems that we have in Los Osos. And that's why many citizens are looking for another plan. We don't have a choice. We have the most expensive per capita plan in the country that doesn't solve the problems. Why do you think that so many people are up in arms? We have a lemon, and we need your help to get it fixed. And we're very, we want to make sure that you understand that we're totally looking forward to cooperating with you and help and asking for your assistance. But the citizens want to solve their problem, and they do not want to give the project back. They don't want the project taken back. That's a process, the citizens' money, and it's the citizens' choice. They surely want your assistance and cooperation, but they're not interested in having it taken away, and that's pretty much impossible anyhow, because it's a vote of the people that will dictate if that would happen. Thank you very much.
And I will forward on to you the responses that you received from Ms. Carrie Brown, the responses to your questions. If you didn't receive them, I'll forward them on to you because I have them all. Thank you. John Fouché, followed by Jesse Arnold.
Good morning, Board. Thank you for letting me speak this morning. My name is John Fouché. I live in Los Osos. I am a registered civil engineer in the state of California. Citizens of Los Osos, take back your community from special interests and fiscally irresponsible CSD board. There's a saying in town that the county will take over the sewer project. My understanding is it takes a vote of the people to dissolve the CSD for the county to be able to take over that sewer project. I would like confirmation on that from this board. There are signs that say that if you delay, you pay. I don't believe that's true, and I want to look at a few numbers for everybody in Los Osos to think about. One thing that we are not even entertaining at this point is a regional plan, and we're not entertaining a plant that is made of concrete and steel in a high-priced location. Let's just look at a few numbers. The current project land cost is about $8 million. We're thinking about we could do it in fallow farmland for about $3 million. The construction of the treatment facility, today's price, current project, $46 million. We can do a ponding system for about $14 million. The current project's collection system, $65 million. Our collection system is estimated at about $40 million. Operation and maintenance of the current project, annual cost, $2.6 million a year. To run a pond system, about $0.6 million per year. It takes around 11 people to run the current facility plant. Ponds can be run with about 3 people. That's a savings of capital costs of about nearly $60 million. That's a savings of over 30 years of operation and maintenance of nearly $60 million. The current project wastes effluent water and is requiring state imported water to supplement that. They're wasting more than they want to import. They waste 700 acre feet a year. They want to import 560 feet of state water per year. They're applying for that right now. There will be sludge running through the middle of town 2 to 3 times a week in open trucks, untreated sludge. Our sludge in a ponding system stays in the pond for 20 years or more. You do not have to take it anywhere. There are deferred costs yet to come for the current project that we are not hearing about. There's other parts of this project that are not included, and the costs are yet to come. There's additional effluent disposal systems that have to be designed and built. There's additional harvesting wells that have to be designed and built. They're required to look at ag irrigation, and they have to run a line out to the ag fields. That's a cost that is coming eventually.
And your time is up.
Thank you.
Thank you. Jesse Arnold, followed by Elizabeth Johnson.
Thank you, Chairman Bianchi and members of the board. My name is Jesse Arnold. I live in Cambria. I am here to speak on genetic engineering, and first I want to say that I do support the comments of Mark Phillips. I attended one of the meetings of the Genetic Engineering Task Force, and I saw some of the same things that he mentioned there. But anyway, for today, I'd like to talk about BT corn, BT sweet corn in this case. BT, as you know, is genetic engineers took a gene for a bacterial toxin and engineered it into the corn so that when earworms chew on the corn, they'll be killed. It is an insecticide. It's specific to insects. Nevertheless, people might have some concern about it being in their corn and maybe not knowing about it if it's being sold unlabeled. So anyway, when I found that a local grower was selling BT corn, I asked him, well, what evidence did he have for the safety of this product? And as you know, when genetic engineering crops are okayed by the government, the company just does its own tests. Those results are not given to the public. They are not peer-reviewed. Someone in the government takes a look at the results and then gives their okay. So there's been no independent oversight. So I asked this person, what independent testing has been done? What evidence can you show me? And he said he would send me information. He failed to follow through, but he did tell me about the professor, as you know, at Cal Poly. Cal Poly last year was selling BT corn, and he said this professor was the one who convinced them that it was safe, and so I could talk to him. So I called up the professor and asked him about it, what independent information did he have, and he said, well, BT corn is approved by the U.S. government. Well, that means that we're relying on the say-so of the company. It's not been independently tested. To its credit, Cal Poly did label the BT corn that they were selling, and I thank them for that. This year, they did not sell BT corn. They did not grow and sell BT corn, and I thank them for that. At any rate, this board could call for independent study, and I'm open to new information. There may be studies being done right now. But ultimately, whether it's studied or not, people should be able to know. And so I'm for labeling, and your board can take a position on that. I hope you will support labeling. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Elizabeth Johnson, followed by Patty Endry.
Good morning. I didn't prepare a statement today. I'd just like to briefly say that I support Mark Phillips' comments that he made earlier. On the GE task force, the highly, highly unusual thing that's happened in over a month and a half, we've been asking, and no one has stepped forward to claim responsibility for the appointments to the task force. And last week's meeting of the Health Commission, I asked the Health Commission to disband this task force on the basis of bias and lack of transparency. And I'd like this board to be aware of that. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the information. Patty Andreen, followed by Andrew Christie.
Hi, I'm Patty Andreen. I am from Los Osos, and I'm not here to talk about the CSD or the sewer. I would like instead to report back to you on Coastal Cleanup Day. Last week, your board adopted a resolution supporting Coastal Cleanup Day, and I'm on the board of EcoSlow, which was the sponsor for it this year. I'd like to thank Miranda Leonard, who coordinated it all. We had over 1,000 volunteers, and this year they picked up 889 pounds of recyclables, as well as 3,566 pounds of trash from our beaches. Coastal Cleanup Day gave us a chance to educate people that what they throw not only on the beach, but in town works its way into the watershed and can eventually end up out there hurting our marine life and making it unsafe for people to use the beach. One gentleman from Cayucas came up to me with this bag. It's all full of cigarette butts. And he got all these butts, there's a couple hundred of them in here, at the playground in Cayucas where the kids play. It was right in that area. And he basically came up and said, there ought to be a law. So I checked, and there is. The state has a law that it's illegal to smoke within 25 feet of these play areas. And I don't think people know that. So if you see somebody smoking in one of those play areas, and if anyone knows how that could be posted in Cayucas at that little beach playground, I would love to know, because it might be that that might deter a few people from leaving this. I know when I took my daughter out there, she would sometimes dig in the sand, and it really is one big ashtray for some people. Anyway, the good news is that this year we had almost as many volunteers as last year. They worked hard, even though it was opening day for Costco, and they brought in about 4 pounds of trash each. Last year, they brought in 10 pounds of trash each. So I think that's really good news. Something is making a difference. There isn't as much litter out there on the beaches this year as there was last year. Thanks again for supporting the event and for everybody who helped. Thank you.
And thank you for your comments.
Ms. Andreen, can you quote that section? Is that a health and safety code or a government code that you read?
I've been told that it was a state law. Trina Long in Tobacco Control told me there was a state law because it is, I guess, a state beach. Thank you for asking.
Okay, thank you. Andrew Christie, followed by David Dugan.
Good morning, Madam Chair and board members. I'm Andrew Christie. I'm chapter coordinator for the Sierra Club in San Luis Obispo County. The Sierra Club, the largest grassroots conservation group in the United States, is one of the many environmental consumer, religious, and community groups concerned with the safety of genetically engineered organisms, particularly in regards to their use in agriculture. Our purpose is to protect the ecosystem. We believe that the rate of application of this technology far exceeds our ability to understand the environmental and public health risks and avoid potentially serious impacts. The biotechnology industry makes the misleading claim that genetic engineering is a simple extension of the traditional crossbreeding that nature and farmers have been using for thousands of years. There is a drastic difference. While conventional breeders face natural barriers that prevent unrestricted gene transfer between unrelated species, genetic engineers bypass this protective barrier by combining genes from totally unrelated species. The technology involved in transferring foreign genes is imprecise, unstable, and unpredictable, so that the engineers have no way of predicting how GMOs will behave once released into the environment. The Sierra Club calls for the following: extensive, rigorous research on the potential long-term environmental and health impacts of GMOs before they are released into the environment, use of the precautionary principle, whereby harm is avoided before scientific certainty has been established, and the burden of proof is on those with the power and resources to prevent harm. Mandatory environmental impact statements to be made for every ecosystem into which any new GMO is to be introduced. These should be based on rigorous science and open public debate. An end to the concept of substantial equivalence by our regulatory agencies as a ploy to sidestep safety studies and oversight responsibilities. For example, toxins meant to kill insects are being genetically engineered into plants, yet the consequences of these toxins in the diets of humans, livestock, beneficial insects, and wildlife are unknown. And we call for the mandatory labeling of genetically altered products in a manner that is easily discernible. All consumers, both citizens and corporate, should be given the right to choose what they buy. This county needs to make it clear to Washington and federal regulatory agencies that it affirms this basic principle. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. David Dugan, followed by Steve Sennett.
Dave Dugan, resident of Los Osos. I wasn't aware we were allowed to talk about the CSD election. I think last week you said we weren't. We got away with it. Otherwise, I would have had something different to say. I've been looking at the election codes, and they clearly define and set out the procedure for certifying the recall election. In actuality, the code actually states that within 30 days from date of filing of the petition, the election officials shall examine the petition, and from the records of the registration ascertain whether or not the petition is signed by the requisite number of voters. And this was done on or before May 3rd. They determined those things. This is has to do with validation of the signatures and not the certification. It's a different process. As soon as the signatures are validated per petition, each one at that time have to be certified. May 6th, it would be respectively May 28th, May 29th, and May 3rd. I mean, April 28th, 29th, and May 3rd. And that's what should be on the certification. I'm not going to go into detail here. What has happened here is somebody delayed the certification to allow the incumbents 30 days to do their dirty deeds of spending the money and destroying Los Osos. I believe that there was some kind of, I would say, nepotism or something going on here to allow the election process to be compromised. As we stand here right now, the absentee ballots are being counted. I don't trust what's going on in there, only because maybe there's going to be a pre-tabulation of the ballots for certain people who are in charge of the CSD to have some pre-knowledge of the outcome. I'm afraid of that. I'm also afraid of the fact that perhaps some signatures aren't going to be, somebody's going to look at a signature and say, well, the signature doesn't match that signature, and therefore that vote doesn't count. I'm afraid of that happening. I have no faith in our election official, none whatsoever. She has compromised our democracy. It's cost us 30 days,
Mr.
well, 29
Dugan, Mr.
days.
Dugan, you signed this statement that you would not make personal comments or slanderous or profane.
And I have not.
I would take exception to that.
Oh, then what I will say then is this. There's been 29 days. How many people have died in defense of democracy in those 29 days? How many people have given their lives so we can have free and fair, unobstructed, unhindered elections? We have not had that. So if I'm being slanderous, too bad. People are dying. That's what counts. I don't count this in monetary. I count this in lives lost. Thank you.
Steve Sennett, followed by Michael Wynn.
Good morning, supervisors. Thank you for allowing me to talk. My name's Steve Sennett. I'm a resident of Los Osos and concerned about the sewer project. I think most people know who I am as a candidate, but in spite of that, I think you realize that this sewer project is unaffordable by fully one-third of our community. And although that's not a personal or maybe a board concern, low-income housing is a concern of yours, and it's a responsibility of all of yours. And I know you're deeply concerned about that. This project would make Los Osos another pocket of unaffordability. And I think this is a very important thing. I know you can't do anything about that now, but the claim that you'll take over the project is uncertain at this point at best. There are problems associated with it. I'm sure you're aware of it. But I think if it ultimately came to that, I think that would be probably good for the community for one simple reason. Los Osos does not have the resources to afford the liabilities. If there were a slip at the Broadison site, liquefaction of the plant, failures, if our contract for sludge removal, you know, with Kern County should ever end, we'd be in a lurch. And these are our regional concerns that Los Osos simply cannot afford on top of this project. Very serious. This project doesn't achieve the goals that it meant to. The saltwater intrusion, the sustainable water source, we're contracting now, I understand, for state water. This has huge implications as to the affordability of our community in the future. And while Californians are expected to pay for all of us for a treatment plant in Tijuana, the community of Los Osos, who, for the most part, as we bought our homes, as we got our grading permits, as we got our building permits, we're totally unaware of the underlying problems and the gravity of it. As the Regional Water Quality Control Board allowed the building of almost 1,000 more units, housing units in Los Osos, that exacerbated the problem. And you can't deny there's a part in it by all of us. And I'd just like to say, I'd like you to really consider what the implications are.
Thank you, and your time is up. Thank you for your comments. Michael Wynn, and that's my last request to speak form. So if anyone else wishes to speak, please fill out a form and turn it in. Thank you, Michael.
My name is Michael Wynn. I'm from Napomo. And I appreciate the chair's urging us today to have civil discourse, although by raising it to a high standard, saying that we can no longer be boring, is quite a problem. I simply cannot match Mr. Eric Greening's knack for stacking a brack and crack alongside the rack. So this will have to be more mundane. I do want to thank you specifically for your assistance in the cleanup that we had in Napomo this last weekend. Your code enforcement was very vigorous. They helped us organize and set up. There was a changeover of responsibilities between Marie Cowan and the new one, Mr. Fielder, Tim Fielder. And nothing slipped between the cracks. They did an excellent job. You had public works people came out with large machines to help us with some of the things that volunteers could not do manually. And it was quite successful. I was told by Tom Martin that we took over 1,000 old home appliances out of the community during that week. And we thank you for your assistance very much.
And thank you for your comments. I have no more requests to speak forms, and I see no one coming forward. That closes public comment, and I would like to thank everyone for the high level of civil discourse today. We only slipped once. So with that, I will close. Oh, I'm sorry. You didn't even turn your name on here.
It was on and then it went off again. So thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple of quick comments that I think are warranted. The first on the someone had asked about the county taking over, quotation marks, the Los Osos sewer. And someone else I saw in the paper referenced it as the Bianchi plan. And as you are aware, but it's perhaps worth repeating, if someone did request this, the county has no plan to take over the sewer, and the individual asked the question was quite correct that the county has no authority to take over the Los Osos sewer plan or some different plan unless and until the CSD ceases to be the representative body responsible for that particular project or its successor. I know that you were asked and county staff has been asked what would happen if X, Y, and Z occurred, the net effect of which was that, as someone's put it, the CSD was fined out of existence. And I think in response to that question from the press and members of the public, we have indicated that we believe that the responsibility would default back to the county as the governing body, but the county, whilst we take no position on what the citizens of Los Osos should do in terms of the recall election, we certainly would prefer not to become involved again in the sewer issue as we were prior to 1998. We feel, as Supervisor Bianchi knows, that the people of Los Osos spoke clearly in 98 that they wanted to take charge on a local level of their future, wherever that future may go, and we certainly at the county level acknowledge that right and responsibility. The other comment that I feel obliged to make, whilst we usually don't respond to these kind of things, is the utterly outrageous linkages made by one speaker trying in some way to relate Ms. Rodewald, our county clerk and elections officer, to deaths in democracy over the past week. I found that utterly outrageous on the face of it. And the suggestions or insinuations that Ms. Rodewald is somehow handling this election in anything other than the historically commendable way, commended both locally and by the state for the efficiency, effectiveness, and honesty and integrity of the elections process in San Luis Obispo County, I think simply belies the facts and should not be countenanced in any way. And I think that that particular speaker owes an apology at the very least to Ms. Rodewald. That's it.
Yep, thank you, and thank you for clarifying the fact that it would be only if the CSD somehow went bankrupt or out of existence that it would come unlikely come back to the county. I became involved in that sewer project in Los Osos in 1982 because a friend of ours lived there, and I followed it very, very carefully, and I don't think there was anyone any more ecstatic when the CSD was formed than I was, because at that time my workload decreased automatically before I was ever in office by 75%, and I found that delightful. I certainly hope the CSD stays in existence. With that, we will close public comment and move on to the consent agenda. I have two requests to speak forms on the consent. The first is Eric Greening, and the second is Jesse Arnold, and the third is Michael Wynn.
I'm Eric Greening on item B6, an agreement with Padre Associates to perform mitigation monitoring for the Diablo Canyon Independent Spent Fuel Storage Installation, Construction, and Patton Cove Realignment. I believe this item's importance and the questions it raises call for a full hearing. On page 4, B2 reads, if at any time during the implementation of the project new environmental impacts are discovered, the environmental monitor shall, in a timely manner consistent with providing the highest protection to the environment, report these new impacts to the coordinator. So far, so good, but then what? There's a reference on page 5 under C4 to a stop work order, but stop work until what is done? Would changes be possibly made in the project? If an earthquake during construction and prior to cask placement were to show a potential for the site to be too unstable for the casks to remain securely in place, could the entire plan for the project be revisited? The agreement is silent on the issue of the trail required by the Coastal Commission as mitigation. While I personally find that particular mitigation irrelevant to the impacts of the project itself, I recognize that it is now a required mitigation. Will Padre Associates be overseeing this trail's construction? If not they, who and when? This trail is a mitigation which will itself have impacts. A poorly situated trail could have deleterious effects on wildlife that is now largely unaffected by human disturbance. Will Padre Associates assist in selecting the route with the least impact on wildlife unaccustomed to human disturbance? If not they, then who? The Coastal Commission added a surprise mitigation at the last minute, something about bringing inner city children to use the trail. Will Padre Associates take responsibility for designing and implementing this mitigation program? If not they, who and when, and will it be a continuing program implemented every year? By whom? How will the program's young beneficiaries be selected? The bigger question relates to the long-term safety of a waste storage facility considerably larger than needed to serve the current licensed period of plant operation. If any facts are uncovered during the time this agreement with Padre Associates is in effect, which erode confidence in the ability of this facility to safely store vast quantities of utterly lethal wastes, what will be done with the information? Will the public be apprised of such facts? Will such facts surface in the relicensing process? Katrina has taught the life-saving value of transparent information sharing among agencies and reminded us that if anything can go wrong, it will. Is Padre Associates ready to take on the awesome responsibility of protecting us? Thank you.
Thank you, Eric, for your comments. Jesse Arnold, followed by Michael Wynn.
Thank you, Chairman Bianchi and members of the board. My name is Jesse Arnold. I live in Cambria. I just wanted to bring up item B2 here. It's under the administrative office. It says submittal of responses to the 2004-2005 grand jury report regarding citizen complaints against law enforcement agencies. And this is an item that I think a lot of people are interested in. So I'm hoping there's someone from the grand jury who could quickly summarize what their report had to say on this subject, and then since it's listed under administration, that the administrative officer could tell us what the responses were. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Michael Wynn.
Good morning, Chairman, members of the board. I wish to just to speak very briefly to both B8 and B11. This Lopez Water Treatment Plant upgrade is a very important part, not only of Rio Grande's water supply and that of Oceano and Grover Beach, but it really plays a very significant role in the integrated water management plan for the entire county. And it's part of our of the appeal that we've made to the state for funding to help supplement that. So I commend you for your support for that, and I urge you to pass it.
Thank you. Thank you very much. That's my last request to speak for him on the consent agenda, so I'll close it to the public. Mr. Ovett, do you have any items you'd care to pull?
No, ma'am.
So that startled me. Usually you don't call me ma'am.
I told you, Mr. Ovett, I said good morning. It changed the whole day.
Mr. Patterson.
No, Madam Chair.
Mr. Lenthal.
No, Madam Chair.
Mr. Shajan.
If you have nothing else, Madam Chair, I'll move approval of the consent.
Well, I was going to ask only for a staff response to B2 and B6. B2, I believe, is the...
Madam Chair, I can do that one.
Do that? Okay.
The item that is in the agenda, and if it's online and is available in our office and other public locations, includes, because the format is fairly... standardize, it identifies each of the findings of the grand jury in this particular report verbatim that they requested Board of Supervisors responses to. The item also includes or attached is the sheriff's response to all of the items that related to him. This particular item doesn't include the grand jury report itself that has been presented and is available in previous forums and is available for review at libraries and through the courts and our office, as a matter of fact. And basically, as your board saw on the item, and I won't go through every item because it is 5 pages worth, but basically, as you can see, just as an example, there's a finding by the Board of Supervisors in this case, finding number one, all 7 police agencies and the Sheriff's Department provide complaint forms to individuals who request them. The law relating to responses requires that we respond to each of those findings. So in this case, the response is, we agree with this finding. It's a statement of fact. We don't usually disagree with findings because they tend to be statements of fact. We run through those findings, as you can see. Then you move into recommendations. And again, the format is a formal process in which we type out the recommendation. Here's recommendation number one. The citizen complaint form should be made available in the lobby of each law enforcement agency facility. And the response, just using this example, again laid out, the sheriff has not yet fully implemented this recommendation, but will do so within 6 months by the end of January 2006. In addition, the sheriff intends to make complaint forms available for download from the Sheriff Department website. I think as your board is aware, the legal response format that's laid out requires that we and the sheriff, whoever is responding or is required to respond, either agrees or disagrees or indicates additional research is necessary. If we disagree, we are required to lay out our reasons for disagreement, and if it requires further investigation, we're required to lay out a time frame for that investigation. So that's the basic layout, and Mr. Arnold's certainly welcome to review the item. Or as I said, the reports are available in the places noted.
And if you want this agenda item, you can have my, if you get it from the clerk. Yeah. And then item B6, Mr. Knoll.
Madam Chair, members of the board, I'm John Knoll, your principal environmental specialist in the planning department. The contract that we're asking you to approve today would authorize Padre to be the monitor during construction of the spent fuel project at Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant. That would make Padre responsible for daily monitoring of conditions of approval, a lot of those conditions of approval being mitigation measures that were required on the project. One of those mitigation measures was the trail. And yes, Padre will be responsible for monitoring any conditions or mitigations that were put on the project as a result of that component of the project, the trail. Most of the other issues that Eric brought up were dealt with in the EIR and were considered by the Planning Commission, your Board of Supervisors, and the Coastal Commissions during their deliberations on the project. Those issues were all detailed in the environmental impact report, and those decision-making bodies considered those issues. The last thing I would add is that the monitoring reports are public information, and so Eric or anyone else who would like to see those reports, they are welcome to look at those.
Okay, thank you very much. With that, Mr. Shajan.
Move approval of the consent agenda items.
Second.
With the corrections and additions and amendments.
May we have a roll call, please?
Mr. Shajan?
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes. With that, we will move on to item C1. May we have an introduction, please?
Item C1 is a hearing to consider an appeal by Carrie Geis of a decision of the Planning Commission approving conditional use permit DRC 2004-00195 to allow a new 8.924 square foot commercial building and remodel of an existing structure to include a tower, decorative entryway, and outdoor dining area located at 671 West Teff Street in the community of Napomo, 4th District. Recommend this item be continued to September 27, 2005.
Madam Chair, staff actually has some new information. We've been working with the appellant to reach an agreement that is acceptable to both the appellant and the applicant. A letter was recently sent from Public Works to the appellant, and the appellant has noted by receipt of that letter that they're interested in withdrawing the appeal. And so we would consider the appeal withdrawn and no action needed at this time.
Okay. Okay, I had a request to speak for him, but the requester has indicated he doesn't wish to speak now, so that's fine. With that, no action is required then, right? Okay, we will move on to item C2. May we have an introduction of item C2, please?
Item C2 is a hearing to consider an appeal by Oak Glen Estates, LLC, of the Planning Commission's disapproval of a request by Oak Glen Estates, LLC, for a vesting tentative tract map for tract 2658. The proposed project is located at 392 South Oak Glen Avenue in the community of Napomo, 4th District. Recommend denial of the appeal.
Yes, may we have a staff report, please?
Good morning, Chairperson, members of the board. Stephanie Fuse, County Planning. As was stated, this item is an appeal of the Planning Commission's decision to deny a 9-lot tract map. The project is located on South Oak Glen in the community of Napomo. South Oak Glen is a dead-end road and requires 1 acre or less parcels require secondary access for compliance with CDF fire codes. There are several issues raised in the appeal which are outlined in the staff report. The main issue is should the county approve projects without secondary access, whether it be interim or permanent in place. Several options for secondary access have been discussed, but none has been reviewed in detail for feasibility or environmental impacts. With that, staff is recommending denial of the appeal and that the board uphold the Planning Commission's decision based on the findings in Exhibit A. And Public Works, Planning, and CDF staff are available for questions.
Are there any questions of staff by board members? Mr. Ovitt.
Thank you. Madam Chair, or for staff on C227 is a map showing a lot configuration. I'm trying to understand this issue of secondary access. What looks to me is a proposed lot configuration to be rubbed in south. There it says lot 64 is a road, and then it shows kind of a deadhead. And my question is, if that is in existence, why maybe one of this can be answered either by the applicant or staff, and I consider it tying to that deadhead.
Okay.
It's C227 on my report, and it's a map.
There we go.
I think that's actually a driveway apron. It's kind of hard to tell.
But the configuration of the lots, you know, that's a pretty good size apron. It looks, I mean, I can't tell you based on that. Other than that, that you have looks to me, easement all the way down through there, proposed easement for the widening of Grove Street.
That's correct. Grove Street, however, does not connect to any other way out, and it's actually South Oak Glen that's the dead-end street. So there would need to be some other connection from South Oak Glen through another street out through a frontage road or another road back to Teff Street. That's the dead-end road issue.
Well, I'm just assuming that is it's either a project on the ground or a proposed project that would have to have access back to the street to the south. Because it shows a loop situation there. I'm just curious. I just wondered why we weren't looking at that as an alternate. As they talk about going under the freeway, they talk about other things. And I don't know, Mr. Asajjan, if you have a concept or what's...
There is another project adjacent to this that both applicants are talking, but I think the concern by CDF is not in and out of this project itself. It's in and out of South Oakland, which I will comment on it after we have gone to the... answered your questions and or the public applicant and appellant, which happened to be the same person. I'll shed some light on this and some of my homework and the staff's homework and how we can make things happen, because this is an area very much desired by the community to see development come through. By that I mean a quality development. We have had problems within the vicinity as far as drugs and other activities that's not welcomed by the community, and one way to clean the area is bringing quality development, and this is an area where we'll have access to the south or east of Taft Street, where most of the congestions are happening to the west and north side of Taft. So I'll shed some light to this as we go forward and see how we're going to manage to make things happen. Unfortunately, some of the problems that we'll be faced with are also part of the solution, if you know what I'm saying. But I'll get into the details of it as we go forward.
Okay, I was wondering, we have representatives from CDF here. Do either one of you wish to address the board on this item? Chief Turner?
Madam Chair, I just raised the issue. If during the conversation you come up with it, that's fine. But it just looked obvious that there was a secondary route for this project.
Yeah,
not necessarily open.
Yeah. CDF has not shown any opposition to the secondary access to the project itself. It's just for the entire community that could come to the south, to the Oakland Road from Taft Street all the way to 101. So that's the bigger picture.
That's correct. Dan Turner, County Fire Chief. Chair and members of the board, Supervisor Kajian is perfectly correct. Our issue is not so much with this individual project, but it's a cumulative effect of the projects that are developing on South Oak Glen. We understand the community's desire, and we're in concert with their desire to develop this area. Our concern is that we have no other way out of this entire, what will become a village or a community, other than to go right back out South Oak Glen to Taft Street. And our concern is to develop a secondary means of people being able to evacuate this community at time of an emergency should that primary road be blocked. And there could be several scenarios by how that route could be blocked. That is consistent with our standards that we apply countywide. Applies to this same development. It would not be allowed under current fire code and standards that we apply elsewhere within the county. What our recommendation is to come up with a method to create that secondary access in a prescribed fashion that will actually occur, so that that happens over time, and eventually this community has a secondary way to get out of that area should their primary route be blocked.
And Chief Turner, would I be correct to say that you have allowed us near to 10 years to to bring that road into existence as we go through our studies and maybe raising the money to deliver that secondary access. You have given us somewhere within the vicinity of 10 years to deliver.
Yeah, there are several projects proposed, some that have already been accomplished on South Oak Glen and several that are proposed into the future that are separate from this one under appeal this morning. The cumulative effect of all of those will create a very densely developed area with one way in and one way out. There'll be hundreds of people that live on this road, and once it's fully developed, without a secondary way out of this, we're setting ourselves up for failure. It is not uncommon for a primary access route to be blocked. It's not beyond comprehension. There's a whole host of scenarios that would cause this access road to be blocked, and the folks would not be able to get out of that community, and they would literally be trapped in their own neighborhoods. That's my job to advise you not to allow that to happen, and our recommendations are don't allow that to happen, and create a method to fix that problem over time. This area has already started to develop. It's going to continue to develop. It has a good merit and purpose to develop, but we just have to figure out a solution that's going to work that will actually achieve a secondary access over time. And if that can be done within 10 years, we're okay with that. We understand it takes time to develop that type of project, but it has to move forward. And we'll create 10 years from now, those of us that are still here, we'll be kicking ourselves if we don't take the right action today to make sure that happens.
And would it be correct to say that further south we go on Oakland becomes more of a problem?
The further south you go, and the rules and regulations are, the longer that a cul-de-sac exists or dead-end road exists, the higher the probability of somebody's going to have a fatal or a problematic evacuation problem out of that area. We know that to be true. I've seen it through my career too many times. People can't get out of a neighborhood because their access route is cut off. And firefighters will go try to go get them. You know, I mean, that's the downside is our folks will try to go get them, and they'll put themselves at extreme risk to do it. And I've investigated accidents where firefighters have been overrun trying to rescue people off of cul-de-sac dead-end roads. They shouldn't have gone in there. We know that. They knew that, but there's people at risk, and they're going to go get them. And it's not proper for me to put them in that position.
Thank you.
Okay, before I open it to the public, I have one question. And what's on this property now?
Oops, excuse me. There's an existing single-family residence and a couple accessory structures.
And will they stay so?
I believe they would be removed with a.
Is there anyone living in?
I am not sure.
Yeah, because I was concerned about displacing people from their homes in order to build better ones, better homes, not better people, but better homes. And that's always a concern of mine. It's otherwise known as gentrification. Okay, with that, I'll open it to the public.
Do you have an appeal in this? Yeah, but it's an appeal. Do you want to
go to that? Oh, that's right. Excuse me. Thank you. This is an appeal. The appellant, and this is the way we always go with an appeal. The appellant has 10 minutes to present their point. The applicant has 10 minutes. The members of the public have 3 minutes each. We come back to the applicant has 5 minutes and the appellant has 5 minutes. So we'll hear from the appellant and we'll hear from the applicant and then we'll take a 10-15 minute break. Are you the appellant?
No, I'm the applicant.
No, the appellant goes.
The appellant, yeah.
He is the applicant, and he is.
Oh, you're the same person?
I'm the same one.
All in one.
Well, then you only get...
I get 20 minutes?
No, you get 15.
That's still too long.
It was a good try.
Yeah.
Mr. Pace, is Mr. Scholl's going to be part of your presentation?
If there is questions of staff, Mr. Scholl's is a consultant of mine that I've hired on this project because it's kind of gotten to be one of those ones that have gotten a little bit technical, and when you're looking for the solution, you know, you try to reach out and get all the expertise you can. So I have hired Mr. Scholl's to help, so if staff has any questions, I would probably defer to him. I'm here to more or less give you a history.
I know I started with a question, but we still need your name for the record.
Dan Pace, Pace Brothers Construction. Thank you. The history was is that I put the property in escrow and I did a due diligence, and I went and I researched all of the land uses and I researched the codes to find out what was and wasn't acceptable to county standards. And having out of the probably 30 plus years I've done this, never encountered anything like this from CDF, showing that there's, you know, you see existing roads, you see existing water, you see existing sewer, you never think about secondary access. In all my years, it's never even come up. So I proceeded forward. I filled out an application. I started a process. And as we got into the process, I stayed within all the rules and the regulations of what I thought was required by the county to do a subdivision. And so when the secondary access come up, it really kind of caught me by surprise. So naturally, I think your first impression is what the heck's going on here? This, you know, this isn't right. I'm playing by the rules. I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. And my hand's getting slapped on something that I can't even control. And then as you go on, we're the type of people that we look for the solution and not the problem. And so we dug our heels in and started trying to work with different people. We had various meetings with staff, and we've tried to work towards the solution. And what we came up with is I think that we agree with CDF that there is a long-term problem down there. And, you know, unfortunately, county funds hasn't been as such that we can get the Southland overpass in. It's just, you know, the money's not there right now. But the secondary access thing, people are going to go. I think I even shared that with Mr. Turner, is that people, they're going to get to you. If there's an emergency, they're going to get to you. They've said that. And if people, if there's an emergency, people got to get out, they're going to get out. But does there need to be a long-term solution? I think we agree with that. And so what we came up with was, in order to try to support it, we'd like to be the ones as an applicant to kick off a mitigated fee towards seeing that. And I think that there's been several numbers bounced around, but the last one that I've heard is if there was a $10,000 per lot created mitigated fee, that would start money towards the kitty to look for the solution, so that the county doesn't have to look elsewhere for funds. And any other, you know, Mr. Turner made the statement that there's several projects on the horizon. I think there's three or four on the horizon with the potential for more. But as these projects come, that monies will become available to provide the dollars needed to provide secondary access. So I think the solution is the mitigated fee, and as these projects come forward, that's going to allow you to have the dollars in place to do what CDF needs. And then it also gives everybody in place what they need to take care of the problem. For Mrs. Bianchi, there was nobody living in the house when I bought the property, and I have temporarily kind of done a favor for somebody, and with the understanding of knowing that the potential is there that when it's been created, that they would have to move because the house would be tore down.
Okay,
so yeah, so and they know that right up front. It's don't want to go into it, but I'm just a favor to somebody that you're helping. So anyways, I think with that, I'm kind of bringing you up to speed on what I've been going through for the past really 6 months, 4 months, trying to find the solution on how to move this thing forward. So if there's any questions or any questions of John or myself, I'd be more than happy to answer them.
I see no lights, so apparently there are no questions.
Thank you.
I have this little panel in front of me.
Yeah.
Madam Chair, I wonder if
John wanted to say a couple things.
Oh, okay. Mr. Scholz. And I think the timer is there on the countertop.
Yes, I see it.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the board, thank you for allowing us to make a presentation before you today. I just want to maybe underscore some of the things that Mr. Pace has said and maybe highlight. I think one of the more frustrating aspects of this process is, while we understand there is an unsafe situation and we don't want to contribute to it, the zoning and the land use has been in place for probably nearly 20 years. So the owners are trying to develop to the county's plans. The solution has been in place for more than 10 years, which is the Southland hook ramps or even an interchange. So we know that a solution had been identified, and so we just want to be part of establishing a prescribed method to fund that and implement that. So we hope that you would make it a priority. We believe this is clearly a highly visible area from 101 into this community. It is an area that is substandard in which you've got homes that are less than desirable, and I hope I'm not offending anyone. But the community would love to see this area improved, and I think we would like to be part of that solution. One thing I did want to clarify is that the Planning Commission, there was someone who had represented the community's position was to let's do a specific plan and let's look at this, and when in fact, after the commission meeting, we did go to the Advisory Council. The Advisory Council expressed a desire to improve this area. They also said there's a solution on the books, and let's find a way to get that implemented. And so our frustration is that zoning has been in place for 20 years. The solution has been on the books for more than 10 years. We have an opportunity now to go forward, and we would hope that you would allow us to do that, be part of the solution, so that we can continue with improving this area. And with that, I'll answer any questions that you might have.
Are there any questions of Mr. Schultz? Mr. Ovitt?
I'm still stuck back on the individual project and not necessarily the Oak Glen thing. Do you understand that what I was talking about? And it looks like what you're designing is a two-thirds of a portion of a cul-de-sac?
Yeah, I understood the question. And obviously, the secondary access from Oak Glen is the bigger issue.
Yeah.
I think there have been some solutions where we've been looking at trying to create looped roads. And what we've consistently been told is, unless that second road comes back out to Taft or to 101 or to the east, it is not acceptable to CDF. We think there are opportunities to maybe connect the loop street that comes back to Oak Glen. But what we've been told consistently is that while that may help with some internal circulation, it still doesn't alleviate the possibility
Major one's the issue, but you still have to have the internal.
Yeah.
And if Graham Flatten were still here, that would have his map up there mentally saying
yeah.
he needs
yeah.
it. So.
And while I think that's a great point, we've just been trying to address the issue that was identified by staff and CDF. But we do understand your question.
Mr. Patterson, you have a question. So don't go away yet.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Scholes, you mentioned the possibility of a...
Thank you, Eric. You mentioned discussion of a specific plan that would actually address the issue on an area-wide basis and bring all of the players to the table in order to find an equitable solution. What is your response to that?
Well, my response to that is that that's an additional layer of planning and bureaucracy that is not necessary. And the reason I say that is you took careful care to go through an area plan for Napomo. You've planned out the land uses. You looked at circulation. And the area is actually now developing the way that it was envisioned. And so to now go to a specific plan in which we're saying, let's take another 3 years to study this and let's look at intensifying uses to help pay for this interchange. The owners want to go forward now because there's a solution that's on the books. And so the length of time it would take to do a specific plan and an EIR, we're talking 3 years minimum, I would suggest. I mean, you're doing the Shandon Community Plan update, and I think with the commitment to get that done in 3 years is awfully optimistic. And so Mr. Pace has already talked about he went through due diligence, he's acquired the property, and so interest is accruing, and so it is certainly... And their goal is to develop as soon as possible.
Of course, my concern is, however, how that development, the people within that residential area that he's proposing and ones that are potentially coming forward, and apparently there are a number of people that are interested in pursuing this same course, is that if we don't have a comprehensive solution, one that will work, we get midway through this process, say, and we've got people in there and the process doesn't get completed and they're there without the secondary access that is really required, and that puts the county responsible, and that concerns me.
Well, and not to argue with you, I think we're saying the same thing, we're just using different terms, because what we're saying is that there is a cumulative plan in place. We just want to implement that. And when I say specific plan, I'm thinking in terms of, and this is the technician in me, is when we go back out and we do studies and we look at the land uses and we look at specific circulation and we look at a whole lot of other issues than really what's on the books, what we're saying is that there is, in fact, a comprehensive plan in place today, and we just want to implement it and make it a priority. I think that's where we are.
If I may respond to that, Madam Chair, that I'm supportive of a specific plan, but that's for the long term. And what we need in place now is probably a mitigation fees for the projects that are coming through the process as we speak or are in the project and we're not aware of this problem. To go forward, give us the money that will help us to put the specific plan, not to change any zonings, but we have enough inventory of land that whatever the specific study will call for, then those projects in the future will pay into solving the problem. Because in the past, I've been on Mr. Buddy Walsh's property, elderly gentleman, very kind gentleman, spent some time with him on his property, and as we speak, it can be considered an emergency access, but if you don't have four-wheel drive, it won't be all weather access. Of course, his desires are to do nothing with the land. I'm very respective of his desires. But he also understands that the future, those who will inherit the property might have different desires as what happens there. But he also those are his words, his gate will be open if there is an emergency. So we have an access to where we can go and come from if there is a need to. But for us to look at other areas of possibilities, as Mr. Noel and Mr. Marshall have gone to the property, looking over the creek crossing, looking at the railroad easement that exists, and we still have some questions as, is it ours or is it theirs? We're looking into, and all this is time-consuming, and as we look at outside sources to come in and help us as what is the best option and what is the future, it's going to require some money that's not budgeted for, and this is one way to make that come forward and bring it forward, in other words, generate some revenues with existing projects to look into that favorably. With one focus, this is not a changing of zoning, this is nothing of that nature, to leave everything as a general plan pretty much calls for, but how we can satisfy not just the needs of CDF, but ourselves too, that we have a safety attached to the development of a community. And my suggestion when the time comes is going to be such that we have an Area 1 and Area 2 in the community of Nipomo, that South Glen becomes an Area 3 where all these fees, as we agree upon as we go forward, with a possibility of a motion from me at the end of the hearing, that this is only for that part of the community and not to be included with the rest, so that we can apply a solution with some of the problems, as I said, it's going to be part of the solution that and make it happen. Again, we're not just want to grow there, but it's an area that the community has come forward and shown desire to see that area. And I don't want to use your words to defend anybody, but it is a problem area for that community. And staff and myself have held several meetings with some of the property owners, understanding what the problem is and where we need to go with it.
Okay. Yeah, and I would say, understanding what you've said, Supervisor Asajian and Supervisor Patterson, we definitely would support that 100%. If we're just looking at alternatives to deal with the secondary access, I think Mr. Pace said that he would be willing to be part of that solution and would be willing to participate in a program to help fund that study. So we definitely are 100% in agreement on that.
Okay, I see no further questions. So. Mr. Lenthal.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd just like a response from CDF regarding putting this fund together and going that direction as far as their comfort level or some comments on that.
Supervisor Lenthal, Dan Turner, Fire Chief again. I have with me Rob Lewin that's going to speak specifically to the four access options that we've identified that Supervisor Kajian just mentioned. What we need to have in place here to recommend to you to move forward is some method that clearly will work that over time will create the secondary access as this part of the community continues to develop and grow. So we have a prescribed method that will in fact work, that be it a road assessment district or be it some other method. The Public Works Department tends to manage those. They're more expert in how to set those types of funds and processes up than we are. We just identify that there's a need and then they facilitate how to make that happen. But that's our purpose, is to come up with a solution that 10 years from now, again, there's a solution in place that has actually worked and served the community well, that we haven't allowed each project to continue forward without correcting the errors of the past. We have to start today with fixing tomorrow, and then we'll figure out how we fix the errors of the past. So if I might ask Rob Lewin to come forward, talk a little bit about the four options that are out there that we've identified for interim solutions that could allow potentially to go forward on the condition that there's a firm, hard, fast solution that'll fix this over time.
I'm really happy to listen to Mr. Lewin. However, I think it'd be more appropriate if he gives his presentation after public comment.
Okay.
And after we take our break.
Certainly.
And then we'll have public comment.
Break is always in order.
Okay. Thank you very much. With that, we will take a 15-minute break and return at 20 minutes of. In session. Our apologies, but we had two of our members upstairs who had birthdays, so we were having just a small party. With that, Mr. Lewin, and then followed by Public Works, if Public Works wishes to say anything, followed by Planning.
Madam Chair, I was confused just before the break. Did you say you wanted to take public comment
no.
first?
No. We'll finish with staff comments first and then go into public comment.
Okay, thanks. I'll ask Mr. Lewin to come up then. Thanks.
Robert Lewin, County Fire Marshal. If I could get the map of the area up. We had numerous meetings with the applicant and also with Public Works, with many meetings with Supervisor Sajian. There are several applicants out for this area for development. And during this time, we came up with five potential solutions. And I'll just go through those very briefly. I'm going to point behind you here. I know this is a trouble. Maybe you could follow along with the mouse over
we
there.
Have to,
we start off at Teff Street. This is where the dead-end road begins.
We can't see that.
I know. I'm hoping she's going to follow my...
The mouse is...
she's going to follow.
Okay. Right. I'll try to be descriptive as well.
Make sure your mouse keeps up.
Okay.
The mouse is on Teff Street.
A mouse and a possum. Okay. The dead-end road begins at Teft in South Oak Glen, so that's where we start the dead-end road. The one option is the one that had been around for a long, long time, and that was hook ramps down by the Southland area. These hook ramps are one potential solution. The other one is an overpass over Southland that would connect the west side of the freeway and the east side of the freeway. Another possible solution is to go through probably the Holloway project right in here and go over the riparian area there to a railroad right-of-way that used to exist. It is no longer owned by the railroad, and there's some discussion about who has control of that now. That area that you can see defined is a flat area that looks like it did have a railroad on it at one time, and it would go back to Teff Street. And then another possible solution is to go over the Holloway area or some other location and connect all the way to Thompson. And then finally, the other solution that we've looked at, I'm going to pull up another map here.
It's underneath.
is to... train now, is to come across, flip this around here like this, but north on the north, is to come across the Walsh property, put a road in along here. The trail that you're seeing there right now is merely a place that a pickup truck has driven across the grass. Come through a fence right over here to this road, this dirt road, come underneath the freeway through a one-lane tunnel and over to this ag road, back over to Hutton Road. This is what the tunnel currently looks like. It's really narrow, but it probably could accommodate a fire engine, but it's one way. That may be a temporary option. So those are some of the options that we've come up with. Quickly, I just had a couple more, wanted to answer some questions that came up. Mr. Pace talked about not understanding the secondary access road issue. That has been in place since 1991. We implement it all over. It's posted on our website. It's been in our developer's guide for many, many years. And then I think I just want to try to answer Mr. Ovid's question. I think I might not have it right either, but on C-27, if we could pull the map up of the parcel map. We would require that cul-de-sac be complete. It'd have to have a 40-foot radius with no parking or 48 feet with parking. So I think it would have to be a 20-foot wide road there. So we would require that in the outcome. I think they just didn't want to jump into how that would be designed yet. And I'm available for any other questions.
Mr. Patterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Lewin, the examples that you just showed us are there's discussion about emergency access and then a secondary access, and I understand that they're very different. Emergency access is just to get there to, you know, with emergency vehicles to respond to an emergency. It doesn't necessarily provide for evacuation of residents, whereas a secondary access is, you know, really designed to allow the residents to move out of the area. Of the examples that you showed us, is that just for emergency access, or would they also be able to provide a secondary access in the event of an emergency so the residents could actually leave the area?
Thank you for clarifying that. We are very careful now to use the term secondary access. It has been our experience that when we have allowed emergency access, in other words, an area that's oftentimes gated off, that road becomes in disrepair soon, that the residents that live along there don't even know it exists because there's a gate they've never been through before. We have many examples of it's sort of like walking into a movie theater and having the emergency exits closed or unlit or unknown. That's why when you go on an airline, the airline attendants point them out so that people really do know they exist. And maybe the people that live there originally when it was put in know, but over time those people are gone and that emergency access is an unknown. So we are careful to always ask for secondary access, a road that is used by people so they know it exists, and it does both ingress and egress purposes for us to get in and for them to get out without our help.
Those examples you just showed us, would they provide that then?
All of the ones that I showed you would provide secondary access. They would be helpful at all times. That would be our hope. We would want them to be ungated and used by the public. The one that would be in question the most, though, would be the one that went under the freeway using the tunnel. It would be a limited use because that tunnel would need some sort of controls on it. Maybe a light or a stop sign of some sort. But we would hope that it would be an ungated secondary access, even that one.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Ashajan.
Thank you. Mr. Lewin, the response you gave to Supervisor Ovid, and this is also a question for staff, what's in front of us, does that need to be part of this? Because you said your request that it is fully developed to the county code and with CDF's approval, but is that something we have to decide here today? Because the appeal is strictly different than
what it is.
I think there might be others that can answer some more. We, of course, condition projects to have certain requirements when they bring
it. That will be part of the condition of when you issue building permits, that that cul-de-sac is wide enough for you to go around and have your vehicles come around without any
problem. Before we sign the final map, we would have to have
those. Okay. Thank you for clarification.
Okay, I see no other lights, so thank you. Does Public Works wish to make some comments?
Good morning. My name is Dale Ramey. I'm with Public Works Transportation. Kind of coming in here at the last minute. Maybe I'll open it for questions, or
Any questions of Mr. Ramey? I see none, so okay. Thank you for getting up.
Nice.
Mr. Hollanda, did you wish? There are no questions, Mr. Ramey, so.
Okay, well, I can.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. I thought you didn't want to say anything. Oh. You just.
No, I can be Gabby, so we'll continue here. When these projects came up several months ago, we were kicking around ideas on how we could get these few projects through because they were in the mill already and still work towards a solution on this problem out here. A number came up of $10,000 per lot, and my recollection is that that would have been enough money to be pretty much to seed a specific plan so that we could analyze all the problems out in the area and determine what the cost per lot would be to get a secondary access out there, whether it be the freeway or some other route to go. So this number has been out for a while, and it based on the number of housing units that you can get within the area right now, the $10,000 is really not adequate to pay your pro rata share of the infrastructure that's needed out there. Even with the interchange, Oakland needs to be improved. You know, there's just a lot of tentacles on this thing. So the idea was to get a specific plan for the area, determine what all the costs were, and then come up with a supplemental road impact fee for that area to cover these costs. We are looking at the Southland Interchange as one of the solutions to secondary access. Our consultant, Omni Means, and the report that they're just completing on our South County study, has identified the cost of this interchange, and it's $28 to $30 million. And so we need to figure out who's benefiting from that and how to spread these costs. So that's in the works. With the specific plan initiation, we could also initiate a project study report, which would be the first step in the Caltrans process in getting an interchange or ramps or a phased construction in place down there on Southland Road. So we would run the two of these concurrently. They would probably finish in the same amount of time, 3 to 5 years, just depending on how complicated it gets. At that point, we would have a good handle on what the costs were going to be and how we could fund these improvements. But the $10,000 was basically just to get things off, get things rolling. There are still other road impact fees that would be due and collectible at the time of the building permit. And we, in fact, will be back to the board probably around the 1st of December with our South County update.
Okay.
Any questions at this point?
Are there any questions of Mr. Ramey? I see none.
Okay.
Thank you. Now, Mr. Hollanda.
Madam Chair, members of the board, good morning. I am Vic Hollanda, the Director of Planning and Building. I'd like to sort of echo what Public Works just indicated to you. I do believe that given the circumstances and given our experience throughout this county, whether it be Shandon or San Miguel, that we're addressing the problem today, I think it's the right thing to do. We are doing comprehensive planning in those communities. Absolutely. Is it time-consuming? Absolutely. That shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. Napomo. It was inferred that there is an existing comprehensive plan relative to zoning and standard to submit applications and get approval. I wish that were true. There is no specific plan right now that staff relies on, nor the Planning Commission relies on, nor even you in the decision-making process. If we reflect back 5 years and look at the projects we have approved in the Napomo area, and if you talk this morning to those who traverse Taft Avenue onto 101 or late in the afternoon from 101 onto Taft, I submit to you they're not very pleased. The emails and phone calls I get on a weekly basis, the complaints about the lack of poor planning, the lack of anticipation of the traffic on Taft, is discouraging. It's even farther more discouraging when I hear stories about commuter traffic using sidewalks for turning lanes. You know, we chuckle and laugh about that. But one of these days, someone's going to use that sidewalk for a turning lane and someone's going to get injured. And then we're going to wonder, how could that happen? Well, as we all know, the buck stops here with your experts, whether it be Mr. Knoll and his organization or myself or the chief. You rely on us for these serious decision-making processes. Relative to this appeal, the staff recommended to the Planning Commission, we gave a compelling argument in case not to support it. The Planning Commission agreed. They based their decisions and they came up with findings for denial. And the commission is a very experienced commission. Now, several times, I have to admit, staff disagrees with some of the decisions and recommendations they make. But nevertheless, that's the process. We continue to have this professional dialogue with all the departments, with the commission, and then eventually, and like today, there's an appeal. My only concern this morning relative to this appeal is in the appeal application, Mr. Pace states that findings of denial based on incorrect information. I have not heard one compelling argument this morning that the findings made by the Planning Commission were, quote, incorrect. Now, if he could provide you with some valid, substantial evidence that the Planning Commission made an incorrect decision, then I'll stand corrected. But you rely on them, you'll rely on us, you'll rely on the chief, you'll rely on Public Works for these decisions. I would urge you not to overrule this appeal, but I would, as Public Works indicated, direct staff to seriously bring forward a specific plan for this next fiscal year. We know it's needed as professional planners. We know it's needed as safety members, and we know it's needed as engineers. And we would urge you to support the Planning Commission's recommendation and decision.
Mr. Ashadjian, and then followed by Mr. Patterson.
Yes, don't have any questions for Mr. Holanda, but a couple of items that he brought forward. I did have a discussion with Mr. Pace and several others, applicants and with staff, but my understanding, I know that's what's quoted in here, but Mr. Pace have told me that the appeal is based on his disagreement with the commission, not necessarily correct, incorrect. The correctness of it was he's going through the process all the way, and be for lack of better word, surprised by this request towards further on into the process rather than in the very beginning of the process, which if I was to put myself in his shoes, I would appreciate where he's coming from. And yes, Planning Commission makes a lot of smart decisions, and I don't disagree with you, but it was last week or the week before when we had an envelope that moved further down, which was supported by the staff, and there was 5-0 against the staff's decision, then it was 5-0 here against the Planning Commission's decision. So it is part of the political process rather than be focused on did they make a smart decision and are we going to do the same smart decision or something different. I just didn't want to play that game.
Okay. And this is the time for questions, actually. Mr. Patterson, followed by Mr. Lenthal.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Holanda, in your opinion, Mr. Holanda, how long would it take to do a specific plan for the area to address the issues of
development there and secondary access?
I wish I could give you a true definitive answer, but because we haven't really scoped out the planning area, it's very difficult to give you a hard number. But given past experience, I would say 24, 36 months. It could even be less than that if we focus a lot more resources on that process.
Okay, and I would remind everyone this is the time for questions. Mr. Lenthal.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Londa, with respect to, I believe it's C-228, and it talks about the funding, $90,000 will be generated on Mr. Pace's map, and I think another $180,000 will be potentially developed under this $10,000 lot fee. I guess I'm concerned, is there a mid-ground you see here that if we can get some type of agreement today, if we can speed up a process, if we can create, whether it's what's proposed here, a traffic area three funds, that would help speed up this process and possibly alleviate some of the problems we've had in the past as far as studying this, designing this, or actually going forward and implementing something?
In one word, yes. But again, without knowing a lot of the specificity, I would be reluctant to say, yeah, let's go with that approach and let's make it happen. I cannot, and I wouldn't speak for Public Works on what their thoughts were on those numbers.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. With that, I will open it to the public. I have two requests to speak forms. The first is Michael Wynn, and the second, Jesse Hill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and board members. When we look at this appeal, I want to bring some other issues to the table that haven't been talked about very much. South Oak Glen is easily the most blighted area in all Napomo. Within the last 5 years, your enforcement code people have found homes that did not have electricity, did not have warm, hot water, that were vermin infested. In some cases, they were prosecuted and actually jailed briefly. We looked at the area for redevelopment, but the acreage was so low that it didn't qualify. And the only thing that has turned this picture around on South Oak Glen has been private parties that have gone in for developments, 20 units here, 12 units there, and have gradually replaced old blighted areas with decent housing. I hope you'll take that into account when you think about it. Secondly, there's no question but what the concerns have been raised by your planning department and by CDF are valid. There is a need for a comprehensive plan, and I don't think that there's one yet in place. But I think it is important that we stay focused on what's the minimum that's required as opposed to what's the long-term ideal. There may very well need to be a specific plan, and that would take at least 3 years. I would urge you to ask yourself, do you wish to stop all of this redevelopment on South Oak Glen for 3 years before you start finding, before you settle on a solution? For us, that would be very bad news. What I would encourage you to do is to explore those options that actually are viable. And complete overpass on Southland will take 30 years. Believe me, it comes second to Woodlands in our community. It's going to take $30 million. Nothing that's built in this entire area will ever generate those kinds of funds. It's going to take development on the west side of the freeway to actually generate those funds. What could be done here fairly quickly is an on and off ramp for 101. That could be done, I'm told, for about $2 million. I think that would pencil out in lieu fees on the parts of all persons who develop here could be made reasonable, and we could move on in the interim period until you do have a specific plan and a larger, more comprehensive solution. I urge you to pursue that. One last thing I would say in passing, this development proposal is different from some of the others that will come to you soon. And that is, we do have both, the NCSD has a water main and a sewer main that goes immediately by the front. They have applied for and received an intent to serve letters, and they will be fully serviced by a community service district. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Mr. Hill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jesse Hill, I represent the Holloway's Christmas Tree Farm, and they have a development proposal for 18 units that is within zoning. It's RS zoned, as is most of the end of the street. And they've owned the property since the 20s, and one of their goals as living there and just being part of that community for a long, long time, and their desire is to see that area improved and cleaned up. They do have a timing issue with respect to money, and you know that's one of the other issues. And I think a specific plan is just one of those things that is going to take quite a long time to proceed. I do, of course, believe that better planning and an overview is important. But at the end of the day, with respect to these projects that are coming forward, and the Holloways, let me just say it right up front so it's crystal clear, they're certainly willing to pay $10,000 per lot to help in either a study or an actual road improvement. And it sounds like the first logical progression isn't so much necessarily the study, but actually getting access and getting an off-ramp. When the Holloways bought the property, the roads simply came across. There wasn't a freeway there. And so they're in sort of a slightly different position, but still secondary access on and off ramps we think are the key. But of course, you know, the other problem with this is if you take the money that was going to be put into the project and use it for studies, is nothing gets done on the ground. And at the end of the day, we'd like to see secondary access there, because that is an area that is within zoning, that water and sewer lines run by, that should be developed, because it is an area that really is one that needs improvements. It can be improved. It's a great area. And if one of the solutions is a road as part of the Holloway project across the creek, we would certainly be in favor of that. That might be a less expensive solution, because one of the very sad things here is that the county owned the Southland Interchange on the Oakland side, and they sold it for like $100,000 a number of years ago. And now that area, the guy who's sitting on it, I just talked to him, he wants at least, it's not $100,000 anymore. And so, I mean, one of the real problems here is what physically happened on the ground in the sale of that. So all we can say is, you know, we'd like to participate in the solution, and we think the logical thing to do is to provide an off-ramp on that site, and the Holloways will certainly put up their portion of the funds at $10,000 per lot created. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. With that, we will go to the applicant appellant, and considering the fact that you're both, and there's two of you, you can have 10 minutes. If you don't need to take it, but you can have it.
Dan Pace, applicant appellant. I think in summary, in closing the whole thing, that with every project that has a certain amount of controversy, this one being the secondary access, I think that you hear of all kinds of scenarios, and everybody brings all types of things to the table that strengthens their position, as they want to call it. But I think the bottom line is that we had a general plan in place. We didn't have a specific plan. A specific plan deals specifically with an area. The general plan said that if this ground is to develop, this is what we want to see. When I went into my due diligence, when I very first went into this property, we all know what a pre-app is. We all know how to look up stuff. This isn't my first project. I did my due diligence. I did my homework. And secondary access might have been there, but it was never brought up to my attention. And I can assure you that my brother and I have been doing this for a lot of years, and we value our reputation. We value the way this community looks. We've been here for 60, 70 years, and we take a lot of pride in the way this stuff looks. We don't want to do anything that puts somebody in jeopardy. We don't want to do anything that's going to hurt somebody, and we want a product that looks good. So we've always taken a stance that we work with staff. And so I think pretty much in closing that we feel like that what happened was is we kind of got caught in the middle of something that somebody else wants that was determined a long time ago, and we're trying to be a part of the solution, and that we hope that the supervisors can hopefully find a way to say, you know what, we agree, this is a solution, this is a way to move forward, and instruct everybody to do so. And all I can say in closing is I really, really urge everybody to really think about the long picture, and the long picture is let's get some secondary access. Let's start the ball today by approving the project. Let's get some funds into a pot so that staff can start their job of finding out how to do that. And with that, I just hope you'll support the project. And I want to say thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Scholes, did you want to add anything? Okay. Thank you very much. With that, I will close it to the public and bring it back to the board for, I'm sure, discussion. Mr. Shajan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's unfortunate that the Advisory Council's letter didn't make to the staff's report. I did get one myself, but maybe it wasn't copied to staff, so I'm not...
Actually, generally, nowadays, they have their minutes.
You have to identify yourself.
Oh, sorry, Stephanie Fuse, County Planning. We normally don't get letters back from the NCAC now because they are posted, their minutes and agendas are posted on their website. And so the minutes didn't get copied and okay. into the file, and I apologize for that.
Thank you. But it was the same as what Mr. Wynn came forward to tell us as to what the feelings are in that part of the town. I can go forward with this for another half an hour. It looks like Mr. Pace has a copy of the council's. And if you make that, bring that to the clerk, I would appreciate it so my colleagues can see and read to their support. Mr. Ramey brought up that 10,000 might not be sufficient. I don't disagree with you, but I think further south we go, that amount should get larger. And you have some commercial properties that will benefit largely from that land use that should contribute more. I'm sure that our honest effort is satisfying to, as far as CDF goes, that we're very serious about a secondary access. And I appreciate your being available at all times to meet with us and our applicants. Thanks for your efforts. As my colleagues did witness that we have some options to work on, the money that we can produce here today or generate here today can go towards focusing on those opportunities. I don't really want to spend money on studies since we have areas that can be a possibility. I'd rather see this money go towards making those possibilities a reality with the help of CDF. That's what is best. Hearing what Mr. Hill had to say, I think the off-ramp and on-ramp is probably the most attractive and easier to get to, but maybe a little more expensive because I have my concerns about crossing the creek. That's going to require a lot of environmental sensitivity, will require a lot of permitting, and that might be time-consuming, not knowing exactly where Army Corps will come into the picture from Fish and Games up to their level. To make it short, I'm going to move that we...
I have other...
Please, go ahead, Madam Chair, if
I
you
have
want.
Another name. Mr. Okay. Patterson wishes to
when
make a
When Ms.
Statement.
Patterson is ready, I'm ready to make a motion here.
Okay, and then I have a comment after yeah. Mr. Patterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My concern is that we have a requirement on the books that mandates a secondary access to a development for the safety of the residents there. And my concern is that there are several people who have stated that they have an interest in or knowledge of others that want to develop along Oak Glen. And where do we stop? You know, we approve this one and say we'll work out a solution, and then another project comes along and we'll let this one in. We still don't have a solution. We still don't know what the long-term development will be in the area, and we keep going and we keep going, and we simply need to look to New Orleans as an example of what can happen when you don't plan for the inevitable. And I think that if this project is approved, it's approved conditionally on establishing a secondary access before it's built, and that no other projects are approved until a secondary access is established, and that we take a very serious look at the cost. You know, people have come in and graciously offered $10,000 per lot to work towards the establishment of a secondary access. And it could well cost 2 to 3 times that. And the people that get in, you know, early on like this, that make the claim that, you know, we went through the process, let ours go, and we'll help work towards a solution. But again, where do you draw the line? And I think it's unfair to people in that area that will ultimately develop to not know what the total cost is going to be and to sort of figure that out. I think we have a responsibility as decision makers for the entire county to say that, you know, we want good planning. And if it takes a little bit of time, fine. But we do it right and we do it fairly. And again, I can't approve this unless we condition it on the fact that that secondary access, which is a requirement, is found and a way to fund it is established prior to any development, prior to the approval of any more projects that are coming in there. And I can appreciate what Mr. Wynn said about the need to enhance that area. But again, you know, I hear more about problems in the Pomo relative to traffic and water than any other community in San Luis Obispo County. And, you know, we're just exacerbating the problem until we focus some solutions and take some actions. I like the idea of developing a specific plan. The county says, county planning says they can put that in their budget for fiscal year 06-07. We get that done, we plan right, and if people have to wait another year or two or three to share fairly in the cost and in the consequences and benefits of developments, then that's the way it ought to be. But project by project by project that don't quite meet the criteria has created so many long-term problems in this county and come back to bite us because of that, because we weren't willing to say, hey, we've got requirements that need to be met and stick to it. Thank you.
Mr. Linthal.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is more, I guess, to county staff. Following up on Supervisor Patterson's questions or comments relating to piecemeal development or approval of these things, have in the past, have we ever had a proposal like this where there's been some type of assessment factored into the original fees or into the original process? Have we ever talked about creating this type of funding mechanism or group to say, how can we speed up either the process or study this? So are we really charting new water here, or are we just trying to rehash the same thing that we have over and over again on these developments?
Madam Chair, members of the board, John Null, planning staff. We have had situations where impacts have been identified after the fact, not necessarily as part of any one project in process. The North Mesa Assessment District was one where an assessment district was created to pave a lot of the roads in that area. I don't know that that was generated by a specific application, subdivision, that sort of thing. Cumulative impacts are the concern here. That's what we're talking about. The more development that occurs in this area without the secondary and emergency access is going to result, in staff's opinion, in significant cumulative impacts. There have been several approaches to this problem that have been talked about today. Planning staff feels that the most sound approach would be preparation of a specific plan. You've heard Public Works talk about doing not only a specific plan, but a circulation study in conjunction with that and coming up with a project and how to pay for that. I hope I've answered your question, Supervisor Linthal.
Yes, thank you.
Mr. Ovett.
It's simply amazing that here we sit about studying the problem. We know what the problem is. And so we're going to take another couple of years, and maybe we'll find the money in the budget, and maybe we'll find a time, and we'll get it done in 5 or 6 years, but it still compounds itself. And I heard that compounding just by John Nall said, well, if it keeps compounding itself, now it causes another study called an EIR. So what have we resolved? We haven't done anything. I have this adversity to the fact that we have to do an EIR to have a traffic study, but if I go out and buy an engineer and get a traffic study done, I get a response, I get the numbers, and I get it done in a hurry, and I haven't gone through two different processes. So what I'm hearing here is it's kind of this catch-22, if you want to call it that, or chicken and egg, whatever you want to call it. There's an ability to assess a fee, and there's a mechanism by which you do it. You either do it under AB 1600, you call it Mello-Roos, whatever it is. You assess a fee, which again drives the cost of housing up, per lot. And this money, and I'm assuming that's what Mr. Sajjan is going to do with his motion, is that this money is going to be set aside to do whatever's necessary to resolve the problem. If, in fact, it means to do the specific plan, then it be done as this project's moving along. Because the secondary side of this thing, and nobody seemed to have picked up on that, is the resolution of the final cost on this thing are picked up on the building permit, because you already have a traffic mitigation issue or situations in the county, in the Pomo area specifically. Whether you call it subsection C or 3 or whatever you want to call it, the capability is there to do it. And I know Mr. Holanda's issue is we need to do the planning. That's correct. But the other side of it is, where's your source of funding to do that planning? And that's your biggest problem you've got right now. And I think what I'm going to hear in a motion is that we now have a capability to begin that source of funding, to begin that process. And we're not sitting here waiting to find that out, or 2 years down the line to put it in a budget. We can actually assign that and get it done now. And if anybody wants to say, well, that's what we're doing in Shandon, is because there's a realization that if we didn't move forward in getting it done now and putting the money up front, it would have never gotten done. And I think that's what the issue here is, that if we want to sit here and study this, then it will not get done. If we want to move forward to it, we have a mechanism by which to do it.
Are you finished?
Sure. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm not like the other one. Didn't breathe.
You just kept staring off into space.
I'm done. I didn't say, you know.
I thought you were thinking. Okay,
my timer's up. My 3 minutes is up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I, again, want to emphasize the fact that according to the staff report, you know, there's a lineup of folks that want to develop out there. And I'm concerned about where we stop. You know, and when the process gets completed of providing that secondary access, the current zoning allows 200 parcels out there, and conceivably that could get constructed one project at a time. And there's always a reason that developers come and say, well, let me do my project, and, you know, we'll get that on the ground, and then we'll let the other folks worry about theirs. And I just think that as a responsible board, we need to ensure that the people that buy homes along Oak Glen are afforded reasonable ingress and egress during emergencies, that we have that secondary access that our fire code requires, and until that happens, I don't think there ought to be development there. Thank you.
The South County area plan was put together, I think the final vote was something like 1993, and I was on the Planning Commission at the time, and secondary access, ingress, egress, has always been part of almost every area plan that we've had since that one, and I've been involved with almost every one of them. I have heard some really good reasons why the development should go forward, and that is the development fees, which will then fund the secondary access. And my point for myself, since this is not particularly my district, is I'm not particularly concerned at this point in time until I hear a specific measure for acquiring the funding to put in that secondary access. When a proposal comes to me, I will evaluate it, and then depending on that proposal, I'll vote, you know, yes or no. But I will have to tell you, I cannot support any development that does not have a secondary access in place, because I cannot put the lives of the citizens in jeopardy, and I cannot put the lives of the firefighters in jeopardy. Simply because they wear a uniform doesn't mean that they automatically ought to run out and put their lives in jeopardy. Since I had a kid in the fire service at one time, I kind of have this feeling on that subject. So that's the position that I have. Mr. Shodgin, you wish to make a motion?
Yes, I do, and I want to comment as well, Madam Chair, if I may do so. I disagree that my motion will be to uphold the appeal with some conditions attached to it, that we're just allowing this project to go forward, and then when the next one comes, we'll think about it. No, my motion will be such that we generate enough money from this project to get the ball rolling, and where that amount come wasn't an offer from an applicant. It came out of through some of the meetings, and Mr. Noel was with me with some of them. Mr. Marshall at that time brought the amount of dollar forward that this will be a good amount per house per to be charged, and this will get us where we need to go. And I agree very much with Mr. Ovid that this is the beginning, and as we go forward, the money generated beyond what we already collect from development fees, this is additional. Because otherwise, I agree that we'll never get there. These are additional fees from this project to get us as where we need to get focused and how to. Yeah, I hate to use the word study anymore because I know the feeling, but this is to focus as where we need to go and how much is it going to cost, and should we go into maybe putting an assessment district together. Mr. Patterson made a comment about the water issue, which is true, and here's a project that already has a Wolf's of Letter and sewer connection with NCSD. Not to say that Nipomo is only the place, because prior to your coming here, we had similar and worse problems coming from Cambria and Cayuga, so with their water shortages and MTBE problems. And also, Taft isn't the black sheep of the county. We have talked about 46 for many, many years, and we didn't stop traffic, nor did we stop selling cars and having people travel on 46. So the solutions have been brought forward in some of those areas, but we all play the game fairly and safely. I don't want to be short in my short-sighted when it comes to the safety of the folks, because as Mr. Lewin and myself and others have gone to the two location, and we know that worst scenario, we have another access we can exit from. And with their equipment, I don't think that is a problem. With that, I move that we uphold the appeal and assess the applicant $10,000 per location, which I would, this has nine locations to the amount of $90,000.
Excuse me, but Mr. Lindholm is...
I was just waiting for a supervisor to finish. Oh,
okay.
Waiting for the supervisor to finish, and then I would suggest that that should be a tentative motion because you're upholding the appeal and you don't have the necessary findings. And then something to consider is whether the $10,000 payment per parcel is going to be the limit of the obligation of this particular development down the road in the future, or whether you're going to ask for the consent of the developer that if there is a solution down the road, whether they will consent to an additional charge to help pay for that solution. But that's something that the board should give staff direction on.
I think a tentative, I don't have a problem, that's the way it should be, but to say that developer, we're going to come back in 10 years and here's what we thought going to happen and he's out of the picture, it's not fair that we hold whoever are the households. How can we do that? I don't think I want to do something that we can push and make it happen. But I don't believe that if we ask the developer to agree on something, then he has sold the houses and gone.
Mr. Rovitt.
Thank you. There is a mechanism. I look at it. Mr. Lindholm, he kind of cut short and didn't give you the options on how you can do this. First of all, I think that what you're doing here is saying, okay, we're going to allow this project to go through. There will be an assessment of $10,000 per lot as a condition. It's tentative motion, come back with it. That's to resolve, begin the process. I think also in the motion we need to say that these funds are dedicated to the resolution of a secondary issue in this area and allow staff to come back into mechanisms how to do it, where they're going to go through a specific plan, where they're going to go through a Mellow Ruth, where they're going to, how you're going to set up AB 1600. And I think the applicant also understands that as they build the houses or if they just sell the lots, that you, the third mechanism of this is the actual road impact fees that are already there. And those are the mechanism, but it has to go, I think, from this point to staff to come back so that we can see this in writing and how it's going to resolve it. And I think that satisfies Ms. Bianchi's issue. And that can be incorporated, if I'm not mistaken. Mr. Lynn, I'm all in the same motion.
My issue is I want that secondary access in place before anybody moves in.
Well, it can be conjunctively, because my problem is that, you know, if we stand here and talk about a specific plan, we talk about all these other studies, we haven't even got to Caltrans yet. And it seems to me that the community is willing to take the on and hook ramp and that kind of situation, which is a resolution to what the fire department is talking about in the secondary access. But you start getting into Caltrans now, and you've got another couple of years worth of planning and process of PDSRs and everything else just in their process to get that done. So what we're looking at is that as these people come online, this thing can be done consecutively and at a point, and that point would be a determination that those secondary would be available. Because the size of, there is ability for traffic to flow based on the size of the road that's out in front of it. But there is not, it doesn't necessarily mean it goes both north and south. Anyway, there's a long dissertation, and I think the issue is with the motion here, should it instruct staff to take these instructions and come back with it so that we can see this.
Mr. Lenthal.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is, if we do this, and this is the first time that we're starting to address some of this piecemeal development, that how does this motion, or do we come out of a process after this with something so someone else is in the pipeline, or the next time we're discussing this, either next week, next month, next year, for somebody down the street, do they say, we know there's another additional fee or charge here because there's some impacts or mitigation? Is this something, again, that someone's going to come and say, well, it really wasn't clearly explained to me when I dropped my plans off with the project that I didn't read the fine print? Or are we setting a mechanism in place where we really are going to address some funding issues for not only this project but future projects to come through? And I guess maybe I need to read the motion rather than just hearing it to be comfortable that we have a funding mechanism, that we are doing something differently than we have done in the past that's going to address these issues. So that's, I guess, where I'm still a little confused.
Want to read the motion with the added material by Supervisor Rovitt?
What I've got is this is a tentatively to uphold the appeal, that there'll be an additional fee for the study for $10,000 per lot, that you're directing staff to bring the item back to the board addressing the issues raised at the hearing today.
You want to add?
And make other motion. I don't know if there's been a second, but I'd second it. But I think the issue here is that there's a level. One is that the condition will be part of the map. In other words, they will pay the $10,000. The second is for staff to come back with a mechanism to use that funding in order to specifically address the issue. And however you want to call it, whether you call it Section C of the traffic mitigation fees. But this is like a recreation fee. You know, this is being charged per lot. This is not per house. So the situation is that it has to say per lot. And then we need to have that come back with specific language of how it's going to be utilized, whether and what mechanism. But then the third thing is that the individual development, the house itself, will still be charged whatever traffic mitigation fees are currently also associated with Napomo. And that is the other process that brings in this south entrance, whatever you want to call it.
Okay, Mr. Patterson, briefly.
Yes, well, the system that Harry described requires having a solution in place before you can actually determine what the cost of that's going to be, and it seems to me that that's going to take quite some time to work out, and I just don't see how that's feasible in, you know, the approval of this project.
Mr. Linthal.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've been wrestling this with my mind, especially when Chief Turner got up, and I had a immediate recall of the experience we had evacuating residents out of Tassajara Canyon, the 41 fire. We were told that we had about 20 minutes to get people out, and it ended up we had about 8. The flames were so hot that it burnt the stickers off the cars and things of that nature. So I'm very, very sensitive to positioning people in basically position them in jeopardy, whether it be our public safety response or our people in the neighborhood. However, I think if we are doing something that I think is somewhat creative that we haven't done before, that I could support this motion if we're starting to specifically address and put money toward a resolution or a way of fixing a problem. I appreciate my colleague, Supervisor Asajjan's comments that I don't want to see another study either. I want to see money applied to being problem solved. I guess the uniqueness in this situation is it appears that we do have somewhat of a secondary access here, although it might be marginal or certainly not what we'd like. So I will be willing to support this and looking at that motion and looking at the wording that comes back on this tentative motion rather. But I want to ensure that we are starting to change the practice of how we've done things in the past, because this piecemeal approach has not been conducive to problem solving. All we do is we just keep transferring it on and talking more about it. So I really want to look at the wording carefully of this. And,
when can this come back?
Yeah, when? That was my question, too. When would it come back?
Madam Chair, perhaps I can jump in here. There has been no environmental determination prepared, so we would need to prepare that, and that would require noticing. So this should probably just be continued off calendar since a new notice would need to be prepared. In addition, we're not certain of how long it will take to finish the negative declaration. If you wanted to give staff a guideline, come back in 2 months or 3 months, and we'll shoot for that.
I hope not that long. When is your next availability on your calendar?
You've got 125 minutes left on October 25th. November 8th, you have 225 minutes left.
Let's go to the month of October.
We can't make
that. Mr. Ovid, briefly.
Madam Chair, I hate to say this, but unfortunately, with a tight time frame like that, we don't have time enough to circulate the negative declaration, which hasn't been prepared yet.
Your name?
John Nall, planning staff, sorry.
Is there an expiration date on the water will serve, intent will serve letter? Because I don't want to see that expire.
I don't think staff knows, but Mr. Wynn can help out.
Mike Wynn, representing in this case the NCSD. There's normally a two-year period on an intent to serve letter, but where planning outside of the developer's control delays it a matter of months, we have no problem with extending that normally.
Thank you. With that, Mr. Hollanda wishes to say something.
Madam Chair, Vic Hollanda again, Director of Planning. Question of clarity, the $10,000 per lot, is it the board's intention to charge or levy that $10,000 on the applicant per lot, and the purpose of the $10,000 is an impact fee or charge?
It's a surcharge.
It would, to answer it, basically it's more of an impact fee. It would more or less be the $1,600 type fee, but the problem is $1,600 is attached to the development. What I was looking at was what's the Parks and Recreation? Quimby fee. And basically, and that's why I'm asking, that's why I wanted to follow up with what he was saying, is that on one side of this, we're dealing with the project itself and a negative deck, and that being a condition for that monies to be made available. The second thing would be that we would ask staff, whether Public Works or yourself, to come back to set that up so that that money then is directed specifically at resolving this issue, and any other further projects would be come under that same issue. And the only thing that comes to my mind that allows you to do that is like a Mello Roos or some kind of benefit district or assessment district. But
I guess what concerns me, with all due respect to Mr. Hill, who's a very sharp attorney, he may come back and say, well, what was the basis of this $10,000 fee? What's the nexus? And I'm kind of concerned about that. If they will stipulate and voluntarily understand in writing that there could be a bunch of loopholes here, that they don't have to pay this $10,000 fee because we don't have an established linkage under Quimby or impact.
My concern here is that the money is earmarked specifically to resolve this area's problem. There is a relationship to the rest of Napomo, and that comes in form of the 1600 monies, which are impact fees charged at time of development.
And I would never suggest to have Mr. Hill come to the podium to stipulate to that, because it's strictly voluntary on his part.
But if we can, and I'm waiting for basically the language staff could put together, says how we make that work.
And I know this is probably offensive to people, wouldn't it be just easier to deny the appeal and direct staff to come back with a solution to the problem?
Well, I think from the applicant's point of view, no.
Well,
they would like to.
I'm just talking about the process.
Right. Sure. And I just want, you know, I see where this is going. I just want to make sure there is not going to be any misunderstanding of why the county is charging $10,000 per lot, and that should there be any litigation, we can back it up, you know, clearly that there was a rationale behind it and a nexus.
We can work on that with this tentative motion before you come back to us as how we're going to gap all the loopholes and what recommendations might be from you folks, or what you can hear from us when you visit us, as what's the desire to come back and give us the options and how to deal with it. And the county council, I assume, at that time will advise you as well as what is the best language to produce here to help us from folks like Mr. Hill.
Okay. Here he comes.
We have a record
we spent too much time on this.
Oh, Jesse Hill.
Go ahead, Mr.
I would just hope that we'd set up a traffic area 3. I mean, we've been working very hard. My wife's been on the Traffic and Circulation Committee for past 6 years, and we've unfortunately had to increase funding a lot. But another traffic area, I mean, the fees are set quite differently for Traffic Area 1, Traffic Area 2. This one has a unique problem. I don't see why a Traffic Area 3 is out of the question, whether we need to do it before or after, of course. But, you know, I mean, the fees are different for residential, for commercial, for mixed use. I mean,
we'll come
3 is a good idea, I think.
With all that language addressed. Going back to staff, I have a motion and a second, Madam Chair, but we're looking for timing as what is an appropriate time for you to come back. We have time in November 8th, 15th, and 22nd.
Probably the 22nd would provide the most amount of flexibility with that, making sure that we adequately notice the negative declaration.
And December 6th?
Around? That would be even better.
Just 22nd, we're getting close to Thanksgiving again. Okay. Be brought back by December 6th.
Second, Kurt.
Roll call, please.
Mr. Asajian.
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt.
Aye.
Mr. Lenthal.
Aye.
Mr. Patterson.
No.
Mrs. Bianchi.
No.
C3.
With that, we have not completed our morning meeting, but we do have to go into closed session. So we will be taking up the rest of the items at 2 o'clock. Sorry about that. Once again, I have to apologize because I know how frustrating that is. But unfortunately, our closed session today has a whole, you know, we need to go into closed session now. Thank you. 2 o'clock.
Shirley, will you say that again? I had it muted. I'm sorry. Will you say that again on the record? Will you repeat what you just said on the record, that there was no public comment for me?
I see no one coming forward for closed session, so we will go into closed session. Return at 2 o'clock. The Board of Supervisors is back in session. May we have an introduction of item C3, please?
We have to report for closed session.
Well, hang on just a minute. I forgot. May we have a report out of closed session, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Board met in closed session for some time this morning on items that were listed on the agenda. Took no final action during closed session. No public report is thereby required. And that completes the purpose report. Thank you.
Thank you. Now maybe we have an introduction. Thank you.
Item C3 is a hearing to consider an appeal of Jimmy and Kathy Howell of the Administrative Hearing Officer's disapproval of their request for a minor use permit to allow a distance waiver for a secondary dwelling located at 1331 Via Marsol, north of the city of Arroyo Grande, 3rd District. Recommend denial of the appeal.
Yes, we have a staff report, please.
Good afternoon, Chairperson, members of the board, Stephanie Pugh, County Planning.
You really have to talk way into
it. I still have to talk into this thing. I cannot pull it close enough. Okay, as was just stated, this item is an appeal of the Administrating Hearing Officer's denial of a secondary dwelling distance waiver request to allow a secondary dwelling to be placed farther than 250 feet from the existing primary residence. The project is located on Via Marsol off of Earhart Road in the Arroyo Grande Fringe. The issues of the appeal are outlined in the board staff report. When reviewing waiver requests for secondary dwellings, there are no written policies in the land use ordinance or other county ordinances for criteria to be used in determining support or denial of these types of projects. Staff has developed an unwritten policy developed over years of reviewing such waiver requests. These include looking at the amount of vegetation removal, the amount of site disturbance and drainage issues. If a project could be located within 250 feet that would not increase these impacts listed above, staff recommends denial of the waiver. Staff is recommending denial of the appeal and that the board uphold the administrative hearing officer's decision based on the findings in Exhibit A, as well as getting direction from the board as to whether or not the policy that staff is using is correct. With that, staff's available for questions.
Are there any questions of staff? I see no lights. So with that, I will open it to the, this is an appeal. The way we do an appeal always is the appellant has 10 minutes, unless they happen to be the applicant, and they are the appellant applicant at the same time. So you have 10 minutes to make your case. And then the public has 3 minutes, and then the appellant applicant has another 5 minutes to respond to anything that was said that, or something that perhaps you thought of that you would like to bring up. So with that, would the appellant please come to the microphone, please?
Yes, my name is Jim Howell, and I live in rural Arroyo Grande. And trust me, I will not be here your 10 minutes that you have given me. In the appeal, there was some question concerning a 400-square-foot laundry area that will be changed by the architect. That was an architectural...
You have to speak right in that microphone.
That was an architectural problem that will be taken care of through the architect. We're asking to be able to go from 250 feet to 310 feet. Now, the reason to go from 250 feet to 310 is that will put us much higher up on the side of the hill and will give us much better solar electricity. This house is to be a very green house, and by doing that, and with the solar engineer, we found that we could increase it the solar by as much as 4 hours a day. The location that the Planning Commission or the Planning Department was marginal, according to him, but it was excellent when the location that we were selecting. The area that we are, you have letters from the neighbors, and you also have in front of you a couple of pictures that were taken on the site. They mentioned in one of the reports that they were four or five mature trees. As you can see, the area that is these trees that are growing on are a very hard pan, and anytime there's any a lack of rain for any period of time, those trees will die. And this, the area that we're building on will be the poorest soil on the whole property.
And does that conclude your comments?
Concludes my comments.
Thank you. Mr. Patterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Howell, a quick question. The reason we're here is because the application is requesting a residence larger than 1,200 square feet, and did I hear you say that that was going to be
that will
changed?
Be, the house itself will be 1,200 square feet. The 400 feet that was there, oh, that was we were talking about will go into the garage, and that will be where the laundry facilities are. And but that's an architectural problem that will be taken care of.
Okay, so the residence is 1,200 square feet.
The resident will be 1,200
square feet. Then the only other issue is the location. It's not within the 250 feet requirement for towards the or to the primary residence.
That's correct.
Okay. Could you, I have a letter in our packet from Miller Power and Communications regarding the siting for the photovoltaics and the solar exposure.
That's correct.
And in looking at that, it looks like the three sites that were evaluated are really very similar in terms of the actual hours that they have solar access, according to his letter.
Well, if you take a look at the last sentence in there, or paragraph, he mentions that paragraph or the first site, which is where the Planning Commission or Planning Department wants us to, is considered marginal, and the others are actually exceptional. Or the one we want, the other one is not acceptable at all. It's too far down the hill. It's on the side of a hill, and then we have a flat area here. This is the area that they are talking about. The planning department wanting to build it, we would be much higher up on top of the hill, and as a result, we would get much more sunlight.
Okay. And then another issue that is discussed in the staff report is the removal of vegetation and site disturbance, and there's actually more vegetation removed in the proposed site than it would be perhaps at one of the other sites.
That would be correct on it, but it also provides a fire break for that property, which there is no fire break in that area. So it would provide a fire break and would also go ahead. And the material that is on there, the soil is very, very poor. So you don't have a lot of trees in the area in which we're bringing the road in. We've deliberately stayed away from trees that would be affected by that.
Okay, thank you.
Well, Mr. Linthal.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You one moment, please.
Okay.
Mr. Howell, you handed us a packet today that had two photographs and I believe four letters from neighbors. And with respect to putting the house where it's at, is it an accurate statement to say that your neighbors would be more happy having this house at this 310-foot location because it's less visible to them and it's more harmonious with the neighborhood?
That's correct. Every one of the neighbors has said that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. You'll have an opportunity to respond if you wish. I have a request to speak form from Richard Wilson.
My name is Richard Wilson, 12510 Marceau. I'm actually not opposing Mr. Howell's project. I believe in homeowners' property rights, and I can see no impact whatsoever on my residency for them to put their house as they choose. My reason that I'm here today is that I am the owner of the driveway that Mr. and Mrs. Howell has easement to their property for their one residence. Now, I don't know how the easement was written before my ownership, whether that includes the complete piece of property or just to their existing residence. 3 years ago, I did an addition on my house, and to meet county and CDF requirements, I had to regrade, repave the driveway, which is about a quarter mile long at a cost of $43,000. My biggest concern with this project is protecting my investment due to damages from grading contractors, construction vehicles, cement trucks, etc., damaging the driveway. Mr. Howell and I have spoken a number of times about this, and he has said, well, I would understand that, and I will repair any damages. What I am trying to do is prevent any, well, I said I'd do this, no, you said you'd do that, and it needs to be done. Well, I'm not going to do it that way. I would like, if possible, for you to stipulate in his building permit, that I actually hope you grant him, that a bond will be posted to cover any damage that needs to be removed and replaced, and that a future maintenance agreement will be drawn up for sealing or whatever over the years to come. That's all I have to say. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. There are no other requests to speak forms on this issue, so Mr. Howell, you have 5 minutes to respond if you wish.
Yes. Steve Kuhl was the attorney who drew up the agreement on the road. He is here today. If you would like to ask him any questions on that, he is available.
Yes. Mr. Rashajan.
Maybe Mr. Kuhl would like to comment on that.
Good afternoon, Madam Chairman, members of the board. My name is Steve Kuhl. I'm an attorney in Arroyo Grande, but I'm actually here today as a longtime friend of Mr. and Mrs. Howell, kind of here more for moral support. But in regard to the matter brought up by Mr. Wilson, some years ago I prepared and put in place an easement agreement that includes the Howell property, property owned by an adjoining neighbor named George Blackburn, and I believe Mr. Wilson's property. I'm not sure exactly which is his, but I think it was part of it. And under the terms of that agreement, the Howells will be required to participate in the ongoing maintenance of Via Marsol if it needs to be resurfaced, if there's cracking, whatever normal maintenance needs to be done. And I believe that that agreement also stated that if any user of the road actually causes damage or their contractors cause damage, that they're responsible for repairing it. And even if that is not in the agreement, that's the normal law regarding easements. So I don't think that's an issue. I think Mr. Wilson's concerns are valid, but I think his concerns are already covered by the agreement.
Mr. Kula, is that agreement readily available?
Yes. Yes. We could easily pull up a copy of it and provide it to staff.
So it can be part of our records.
I don't have it today, but we could easily make it part of your record.
Thank you.
Thank you. I have no more questions. Thank you, Mr. Kuhl. With that, I will close it to the public and bring it back to the board for discussion and or action.
Madam Chair, perhaps just for the board's clarification, the clerk could switch back to the PowerPoint because we do have an aerial photo which will help give the board an idea of the vegetation on the site. The existing residence is located in this area, served by a hand-eye coordination again, a driveway that comes along in here, roughly. The proposed residence would be in this area, with a new driveway that would need to come through here and serve the new residence. As you can tell, that new driveway would impact a number of trees, It would also require the removal of a number of trees, would also require the crossing of a swale, and the improvement of that crossing with some kind of a drainage facility, which creates the need for additional grading. It's for those reasons that staff took the original position to recommend that the site not be supported and that the administrative hearing officer supported staff's original position. I just wanted to point those things out on the aerial.
Mr. Shajan?
Looking on the side, where is the drainage as we speak? Where does everything drain to? Because if this is, if their location to get on the top of the hill and everything comes down from a hill anyway, wouldn't that tell me that there is less of a disturbance as far as drainage?
In order to serve this new site, the driveway will have to cross an existing drainage swale. The existing natural drainage that occurs on the site occurs through this drainage swale. This will have to cross that swale, so it'll have to contain that drainage.
So your concern is just the swale?
That's the main concern relative to drainage, yes.
And can that be mitigated by installing a culvert?
Yes, but again, there are sites within 250 feet of the existing house that would not require the installation of a culvert and the disruption of a natural drainage swale.
Thank you.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes, I basically had my question answered by staff, and thank you.
Before you take that picture away, where is the current site being, I mean, the one that staff proposed? I don't mean current, but the...
We didn't propose a specific site, but it would be within the range of the existing residence, which is located here. It looks like there's clear areas that are adjacent to the existing driveway. A shared driveway could be used to serve both the existing house and the proposed secondary dwelling.
Okay. That's what I wanted to ask.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, if yes. I may, John Null, planning staff, on page C318 of your staff report, there is a picture that shows the 250-foot radius coming off of the existing primary residence, and that might help answer the question that was just asked.
This one, page 18, doesn't have all this nice vegetation in green.
It does not, no, but it does show you the proximity in which the secondary would need to be located to the primary in order to meet the 250-foot.
Okay. Thank you very much. Mr. Patterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's actually a question of staff. Because of the fact that the criteria that has been used to determine whether or not a second dwelling fits onto a site, because it didn't do that and staff or the hearing officer and staff made a negative recommendation, there was no environmental assessment of what putting this particular second dwelling on the location, that wasn't done.
That's correct.
And so if the appeal is denied and the project moves forward, there will be an environmental determination. Is that correct?
Well, Supervisor Patterson, if the appeal is denied, then the project is denied, and the applicant would have then the opportunity to simply come in and apply for a building permit as long as the proposed location fell within the 250 feet of the primary.
Right. My question is if it's not.
If the appeal is upheld, then staff needs to go back and prepare a negative deck. That's correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, do we have any further discussion, Mr. Lenthal?
Yes, I just have a comment. It seems to me these are the difficult balancing acts that there are no right or wrong or correct answers. You have a situation where we're encouraging somebody to do something that's good for the environment, to build a green residence, to apply for solar, to pick a site that's in a preferable location, whether it's 2, 3, or 4 hours, depending on the time of year, to increase the use of the solar facility. And then yet, if that site is not within the 250 feet, how do we balance that in comparison to taking out another oak tree or a pine tree to accomplish that. Originally, one of my concerns were that there were three areas that really didn't comply here. It was the 400-square-foot laundry room or the unknown of what that room was going to be used for, and I was glad to see that was resolved today. As far as the driveway or the culvert, we have rules, ordinances, processes in place to ensure that whatever goes up there, that there will be adequate drainage, that we be subject to an inspection by county staff. With respect to crossing a swale or putting a culvert in, that we have rules and regulations in place to ensure that we're not harming the environment. We're just providing a culvert that provides access to this property. So based on that, what I'm thinking is proposing a motion, if we're ready for that, unless there's more discussion.
Not yet. We still have lights up here, and I have a comment.
Sorry, go ahead.
Mr. Patterson? Then I have a comment.
Okay. Well, I was wanting to react to Mr. Thank you. I was wanting to respond to Mr. Linthal's comments, and that is in looking at the maps, you know, and the criteria that was actually affirmed by a previous board and what we should or how we should evaluate the siting of secondary dwellings, it seems that all of those things are exacerbated by putting the residence where the applicant is proposing to put it. And if you follow the criteria that, again, a previous board has directed staff to use in determining these sitings, we wouldn't have as much site disturbance. We wouldn't have as great an impact on the native vegetation. And as far as the solar application is concerned, I have photovoltaics on my home and solar water heating on my home. And I know that you can actually relocate those facilities or put your solar collectors in a place that is more advantageous. They don't necessarily have to go right on the house itself. And considering all the factors, it seems the more environmentally sensitive way to go is to have less site disturbance, remove less vegetation, not build another road that basically follows the perimeter of two sides of the property when you already have a road in place. So if we're talking about environmental impact, it seems that putting it in the area within the 200-foot radius, it would solve the problem. And if the applicant would do that, we wouldn't even be here today since they've already reduced the size of the dwelling to the 1,200-square-foot limit. It would just be a matter of getting a permit over the counter, and it just doesn't make good sense when, you know, we've directed staff to follow this criteria, and then they've done that, and then we turn around and say, well, we're going to make exceptions, and I think the arguments for making the exception are really weak in this case. Thank you.
And my comment would be that the more disturbance of native vegetation that you have in order to put in a driveway of this length, the more drainage and erosion you will have down gradient. That's an accepted fact. And so it is a balancing act, but in this case, I think we sort of have fallen over onto one side and we've lost our balance. Mr. Shajan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Looking at the picture where the location they're requesting is a rocky area, which tells me regardless if you have a house or not, you still have no area for the water to be soaked in and has to go down the hill. So it's not the location of the secondary dwelling as much as probably driveway that possibly take away. But the balance is, in my thinking, that if you were to put the house where probably the staff is recommending, it's going to take more of a ground area where water could have soaked in, now possibly going towards the driveway, and still seeing a balancing act here that with the possibilities. And looking at, do you have a guesstimate that how many depends on which direction the driveway goes? We have a picture of it here, but I don't know if that's been engineered to say this is exactly the location going to be and how many oak trees possibility that might be cut down. I know you have a figure there, but is that a final?
No, probably not. The driveway that shows on the site plan is narrower than what would be required by the CDF. So potentially there's more trees to be removed. In the application that was submitted by the applicant, they note, if I can find it, five oak trees, one pine, and one manzanita.
What kind of mitigation measures we have had in used in the past to replace oak trees that possibly has to be taken out, depends on their sizes?
Gotcha. Typically, it's 4-1 replacement. So if you remove one, you replace it with four trees.
And the size?
5 gallon.
5 gallon.
Minimum. If the tree is merely impacted, in other words, if the driveway encroaches on the root zone, then we call that an impacted tree, not a removed tree, and then the replacement is 2-1 ratio,
okay.
Slightly less.
Thank you.
And I have no more lights. Mr. Patterson or Mr. Lindahl?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think another important component of a balancing act is when you have the wishes or desires of your neighbors. I guess one question for staff, if I can. There was only one letter that I saw attached in our packet, but yet we got four today. Was that an oversight, or are these letters?
We didn't receive those.
Staff didn't receive those.
Okay, thank you. And where you have four neighbors that say, I would rather have the site that the Howells suggested because it adds more privacy, it's less automobile noise, it doesn't offend my view, I'd rather look at the trees and the agriculture option they have. I think that makes a compelling statement that we have to include what the neighbors' desires are here into our balancing act to say that if this is blended in, we talk about view shed and things, to where here are the neighbors that are saying we would rather have the house a little farther away from the primary residence because it fits in better with our neighborhood. Our neighborhood is what we look out through the kitchen window, through the bathroom window, through the driveway and things that we go. That to me tilts this one side to say that I think we can justify making some exceptions here. And what I propose is a tentative motion to uphold the appeal with the following conditions. Number one, that there's no 400 square foot laundry or structure that adds on to the maximum 1,200 square foot size. That the original access road or agreement easement assessment be given to staff, that a copy of it is on file from the attorney here, and that we have some type of approved landscape botanist plan to say that you took this many trees down that you will plant, if it's a 4-1 acceptable ratio, that many trees to offset or mitigate what you have done to try to accommodate this driveway. And I realize it's a work in progress or a moving target, but I think if we can include those three components that I'm comfortable making that tentative motion.
I second that motion. Madam Chair, Mr. Wilson, do you have the copy of the agreement you have with between you and, or among you and other neighbors that Mr. Kuhl talked about?
I have not seen one.
Okay, Mr. Kuhl, maybe good neighborhood policy, if you can mail him a copy of what you're going to mail us, then everybody is aware of what we're talking about.
Excuse me. Maybe we have a roll call. Oops, Mr. Ovid.
Well, I just want to make one comment. Staff was asking, or maybe it just Cammie asked, that, you know, should we be looking at revising it? And I don't see us revising the standards we have now. They're countywide, and so far we've only had a few that we've looked at for exceptions, and they've each been different. So it's very difficult to write one that's going to fit all. And I think that this has a set pattern, and then beyond that, there is a protocol by which they can go through to ask for relief of that, and that's what we're doing.
Okay, now may we have a roll call.
Mr. Lindahl.
Aye.
Mr. Asajian.
Aye.
Mr. Ovett.
Aye.
Mr. Patterson.
Aye.
Madam Chair, was that a tentative motion?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, are you going to set a date for it to come back?
Yeah.
Actually, staff has to prepare a negative declaration, and it has to be noticed again, similar to the one that went this morning. So
you gave it November 22nd date that Katra didn't take.
Well, the reason I didn't take that, being so close to Thanksgiving, and I want to be sure that everybody was able to attend the meeting. And 22nd and 6th, there's only a week difference. But 22nd of November sounds good.
I'll go for the 6th. Give me an extra week.
December 6th would be great. I have 3 appeals anyway, so I might as well spend a day here again.
We'll bring it brown back for you.
And my vote is yes.
Okay, Shirley's on as a yes. And then the 2nd concurs with the December 6th date. Thank you.
Yes, for the record. And I was shaking my head.
Okay, now we're up to 10:30 this morning. We're only 4 hours late. So may we have an introduction of item D1, please?
Item D1 is the submittal of the fiscal year 2004-2005 fourth quarter financial report.
May we have a staff report, please? Okay. We have a roll call. No, I'm just.
That'd be fine with me. Good afternoon. I'm Dan Buckshy from the administrative office. Here this afternoon to discuss the year-end financial review for fiscal year 2004-2005. And before I get started, are there any questions? All right.
Next.
Okay. Let's start with a general overview, a high-level view of the year-end, and then I will review some specific departmental issues, and I will ultimately ask for a budget adjustment relating to the acceptance of gifts. In summary, we ended the year on track, and...
Sir Bakshi, if I may interrupt here and ask somebody if they can close the door and be less interruptions here.
Sure.
Apologize for the interruption, but
no problem. Okay.
There he is.
Okay. In summary, we were on track as compared to previous years. General fund expenditures were at 91% of budget, while general fund revenues were 99% realized. And to put it simply, we ended the year under budget. With respect to the year-end general fund balance, we ended the year at just under $26 million. This is approximately $11 million higher than what was projected at the time of the proposed budget hearings in June of this past year. The reason for that difference is that there were more departmental savings than what was anticipated. There were higher than anticipated non-departmental revenues, and some of the contingencies were unspent. This issue will be discussed in more detail in the following agenda item, so I just ask if you have any questions with respect to fund balance, you hold those for the next item as they might be answered at that time. Moving on to some of the specific issues, there are 6 departments who were 5% or greater over their budgeted net county cost, and I'd like to note that all of these issues were discussed throughout the fiscal year, whether it was quarters 1 through 3 or in some cases in all of those. First up is the Agricultural Commissioner, which exceeded their net county costs by $158,000, or 8.5%. And this was primarily due to a shortfall of the gas tax revenue. Clinical lab was 103%, or approximately $330,000 over budget. This was due to a revenue shortfall associated with the number of lab tests conducted. They were far short of the budgeted amounts. The health agency staff will be presenting options regarding the lab to your board within the next couple of weeks. The district's attorney's office exceeded the net county costs by about $900,000, or just under 17%. And this was due primarily to a shortfall of revenue from a couple of different sources, the first being SB 90 revenues, which were $300,000 under budget. I would like to emphasize that this will be received from the state at some point in the future. SB 90 revenues are for administrative claims that are related, administrative activities related to mandated programs by the state. County departments are reimbursed from the state for those administrative activities. Given the state's financial difficulties, they've put these payments on hold, but they have committed to making them at some point. We've made it a standard budgeting practice the last couple of years to have departments budget for these revenues. The general fund makes up for the shortfall in the near term with the concept that the state will reimburse the general fund in the longer term and make the general fund whole at that point. There's about $375,000 shortfall of Southwest border crime revenue, and the remainder of the shortfall is attributable to various revenue sources such as reimbursement from the California Men's Colony, Tascadero State Hospital, and other environmental cases. For this past fiscal year, several revenue sources were projected based upon cases and investigations in process. And this was done in order to project the number of cases that would be completed during the fiscal year and ultimately reimbursed. This resulted in an overestimation of revenues because not all of the cases were completed during the fiscal year. It's believed this situation has been remedied for the current fiscal year, 05-06, as revenues were revised to reflect longer-term averages for caseloads. And it should be noted that some of the revenues from the past fiscal year may be received in fiscal year 05-06, which would help to offset this past year's shortfall. Emergency services was 160% or 335% over its budgeted net county cost. This is due to revenue shortfall or revenue related to nuclear power plant emergency planning that was not accrued at year end. The revenue will be received in the current fiscal year and will offset the shortfall. This was a one-time accounting issue and procedures have been put in place to help ensure that the revenues are accrued at year end. And lastly, general services exceeded its net county cost by $400,000, or approximately 6.5%. Custodial maintenance services at General Hospital were incorrectly budgeted for in the amount of $500,000. The facility is being renovated, and the services were not required. The department was able to offset $100,000 of the shortfall with salary and other expense savings. As mentioned earlier, there were a number of departments that were significantly under their net county cost. The first of these is the clerk recorder's office, which was approximately 33% under budget due to revenue associated with recording fees and the fact that the department was able to absorb costs associated with the November presidential election. County fire was under its net county cost by $645,000, or 7.5%. Approximately $400,000 related to grant funding that was not spent but will be spent in the current fiscal year. And the remainder is due to savings in a number of expenditure accounts. Drug and alcohol services was under by $185,000, or 120%. And they actually contributed an additional $32,000 to the general fund. The reason for this is several one-time unbudgeted grants were received throughout the year, and they used existing staff to perform the grant activities. In addition, there were savings in various services and supplies accounts. Farm advisor was under budgeted net county cost by $33,000, or just under 11%. And the information technology department was under budget by $680,000, or 8%. Medical services and medical assistance program was under budget by $2 million, or just under 28%. In June of last year, the department was advanced approximately $2 million to offset cash flow issues related to outpatient billings. And this ties back to when General Hospital was closed in June of 2003. At that time, the county was required to receive new billing codes from the state in order to bill for continued outpatient services. Well, the state was very delayed in providing those billing codes, and as such, there was a backlog of billings within the department. Those codes, and those billing codes have since been received. The backlog is eliminated. The $2 million has since been recovered, and the general fund is now made whole. Mental health was under budget by $400,000, or 11%, as it received additional revenues throughout the year, and salary and services and some supply savings accounts were also realized. Planning and building was under by $580,000, or 10.5%. And the public defender's office was under budget by $614,000, or 14%. There are higher revenues due to reimbursements from some state agencies, such as CMC and ASH, and there were reduced expenses due to lower payments for court-related psychological examinations. Public Works Special Services was under budget by 13%, and this was primarily due to development services revenues coming in higher than anticipated. As for social services, there are four budget units that comprise the Social Services Department. There are the administration and foster care budget units, as you see here, and there are also CalWORKs and General Assistance. CalWORKs and General Assistance were generally on track. As you can see here, the administration budget was over by about 5.5% due to lower level of reimbursement from the state. However, the big story with social services is that foster care was under budget by $1.5 million, or 74%. Reason for this is that more cases have been determined to be federally eligible for federal reimbursement. And when these cases are determined as such, this reduces the county cost by 50%. The staff has made it a priority within the department to try to have as many cases be determined federally eligible as possible. And lastly, the suspected abuse response team was under its budgeted net county cost by approximately 5.5%. Moving on to capital projects throughout the year, a number of projects were completed throughout the county. The General Services Department, which focuses on infrastructure for internal use by the county departments, as well as some of which are used by the public, completed 9 capital projects at approximately $1.5 million. And you'll note that the new government center is not included in this number. Obviously, it's operational, but there are still a few bugs that are being worked out, and therefore it's not technically considered complete. If it were, this number would be increased by approximately another $40 million. There were 7 major maintenance projects completed at $500,000, and 41 smaller maintenance projects at about $750,000. The Public Works Department, which focuses on roads and bridges, sewers, and other types of public infrastructure, completed 9 capital projects at a cost of $12 million and 5 maintenance projects at $760,000. I just would like to point out that there is a detailed listing and description of all of these capital projects in the actual agenda item, should anyone care to review those. With respect to performance measures, the year-end actual results for approximately 250 measures for all county departments are available in the agenda packet. I'm not going to review all 250 of those today for fear of boring people to tears, but in this upcoming, should anybody want to take a look at those, they are all available as a reference. This upcoming year, or the current fiscal year rather, there is going to be an increased focus upon tracking and reporting of the performance measures, and there will be periodic updates provided to your board. And last but not least, the recommendation before you today is to receive and file this year-end report to accept gift funds totaling $32,000 on behalf of various county departments, to approve appropriation adjustments to transfer the gift funds into the social services and library budgets, and this action does require a 4/5 vote. And last but not least, to discharge $31,000 of bad debt on behalf of mental health services. And I'll be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Mr. Patterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't really have any questions. Okay. I'll save my comments.
There are no other speakers. Is there anyone from the public who wishes to address the board on this particular item?
Should anyone from the staff wishes to comment?
Does anybody from the other staff wish to comment?
There's no public address.
Does anybody want to comment? No. With that, Mr. Patterson, I'll close it to the public and bring it back. Time for discussion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to really thank all the department heads for their diligence this past year and complying with not only the performance review criteria, but also in working so hard to keep their budgets in line. You know, the past several years, all local governments, city and state and special, or city and county and special districts, have been short-funded, and oftentimes those shortages couldn't be anticipated because of actions by the state and federal government. And I just want to, again, commend the department's heads and all of staff for working so hard to keep San Luis Obispo County physically fit. I can't yet say that we're physically fit, but I hope that we're recognizing the problem here in San Luis, and that we'll work on that maybe in a couple of years. I can add that. But anyway, thank all of you for your fine work.
We're financially fit, and I echo that.
Do we need to take these one at a time, or can we do them all at one recommendation?
Second.
May we have a roll call, please?
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Lenthal?
Aye.
Mr. Asajian?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes.
Good job, Dan.
Yes, very good. May we have an introduction of item E1, please?
E1 is the submittal of a resolution approving final appropriation reserves, designations, and contingencies for the 2005-2006 final budget.
Move to approve.
Mr. Grant.
Good afternoon, Jim Grant.
Good afternoon, Jim Grant from the County Administrative Office, and we're here today to talk about final budget actions. And I say when we're here, I also mean that our esteemed auditor, Controller Jerry Sibach, who helped put this item together. And what we want to do today is ask your board to officially basically close the books and recommend some final fund balances that we talked about just a little bit earlier. And we'll start with what a fund balance is. An FBA, or FBA, is the difference between the adopted budget and the actual expenditures and revenues at the end of the fiscal year. So typically, if we budget $100, we spend 80 of those dollars, we end up with $20 that we can use in the next year to help fund the budget. So again, that difference is available for financing. And we have, when we put the budget together and brought it to you in June, we had F fund balance available estimated at $15 million, but it actually ended up about $25 million. So we need to discuss that today, and then we'll recommend what your board can do in that. So what generates the fund balance available? It's the differences in non-departmental revenue, that revenue that departments themselves don't generate, but those things such as property tax, sales tax, transient occupancy tax, those types of things. Department expenditures, departmental revenue, and then ending contingencies. That all is added together to come up with your fund balance available. And so again, here it is. It's $25.9 million in fund balance, and it's broken down into these areas. Non-departmental revenue was $11 million. Department savings, $6.2 million. There was a loan repayment of about $500,000 that has to be added into the equation. And then unspent contingencies of $9.2 million. That totals the $25.9 million. In terms of non-departmental revenue, the major factors that were involved in gaining more revenue than we had anticipated, it was really, for the most part, property taxes. Property taxes, as you know, have been pretty much booming as housing has boomed and the cost of housing has gone up. There are all sorts of factors that are involved in that, but the fact is property taxes were about $8 million higher than we had anticipated, but you have to take out the shift, the state shift schools, the ERAFT, of about $2.4 million. That they we had to send to the state this year. Property transfer taxes was about $1 million. Sales and use tax was about $1.3 million over. We typically hit that pretty close. This year there were two refuelings and outages at Diablo Canyon Nuclear Power Plant. And when that happens, typically there's a big spike in the sales tax. And so that occurred this year. And we try to anticipate those, but I think we missed it just by a little bit this year, so the sales tax was up higher than we anticipated. Interest revenue, also the interest rates started to come back up a little bit. We were very conservative because interest rates had been going down for the last few years, and so it did spike back up a little bit. Plus, we had some additional dollars in the reserves and designations that created about 0.7 or $700,000 more in interest revenue. And the vehicle license fee was about $200,000 more than we had anticipated. Department savings, we've just really run through those. I'm not going to go through those again. Dan Buckshy in the fourth quarter of the year-end report Showed you where those savings were with department savings, but here they are again. Next. So what do we do? We sat and we talked about what we would do, what the prudent actions would be, and basically the actions what we're looking at right now is to put money in reserves and to pay some debt down. So we think that's a financially prudent thing to do. So the listing goes like this. Increase contingencies to 5%. During the budget hearings, your board reduced contingencies about $300,000. We'd like to put that back and keep the 5% contingency intact. We want to increase designations in three areas. General fund internal loan, which just means that the county can do small internal loans to departments, such as the airport, for projects that they typically would have to go to a bank or outside funding sources to get those dollars. We can, through the auditor's office, a loan can be made very simply, and the cost of that loan is insignificant, basically. So there's no closing costs, basically. And so it's a good deal for the departments to do these internal loans. Additionally, legislation was passed to increase the cooperative road program from $1 million to $2 million. So this will help in the cooperative road program as well, particularly in your district, Supervisor Bianchi. Capital projects, we'd like to recommend putting $3.9 million into capital projects. That really brings our capital project fund up to about $9 million, which is, sounds like a lot, but isn't when we're doing major building projects, particularly a women's jail that we have that we're working on right now that's estimated to be somewhere in the neighborhood of about $22 million. Now, we hope we get state funding to pay for most of that, but that has not occurred yet. So we want to keep moving forward with the women's jail, and so by placing some money into this, into the designations, it allows us to do that and other projects. And then automation replacement, there's still a number of big automation replacement projects out there, such as the criminal justice system, that we need additional dollars to help fund. This goes into that designation and helps defray those costs. And in terms of reducing debt, there's a pension obligation bond that was your board approved in 2002-03, I believe. And it we pay quite a bit on debt service each year on that. The auditor has suggested, and I believe it's the CAO too, has suggested we pay down some of those bonds that have a variable interest rate. That just gets those off the table. We're basically paying a little bit more on the principal so that the rates for the pension obligation bonds stay steady for the next few years. So we're not increasing departments' costs by increasing the rates. So it just lowers the rate, or keeps the rate steady, I should say. And then last, it's a 1994 certificate of participation, basically a loan that was taken out to build the social services building and the jail, the men's jail that we have right now in the late 90s. This 1.1 will pay the jail portion of it off, and so we will not have a debt service in that area. That frees up a funding source called the Criminal Justice Construction Fund that can be used for other purposes, like a female jail, if we need to do that. So that frees up about $260,000 a year in debt service for that particular fund. So that's the $10.9 million. And then our recommendation today, then, is to adopt the final appropriations, reserves, and designations and contingencies pursuant to your board resolution. And relative to the determination of the final fund balances. Now, one other point, this was the general fund. There are other funds like the parks and the library fund. There's about 15 other funds, 20 other funds, that all were in the positive area. None of them were negative fund balances. Those we're recommending, for the most part, go back into those departments or those funds' contingencies and or designations to be used for building and or other costs of doing business. That's all I have. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions of staff? I see no lights. I have no request to speak forms, and I see no one from the public coming forward, so I'll open it and close it to the public. Mr. Linthal.
Yes, I'd just like to make a comment and then a motion that I want to thank Mr. Grant for doing such a good job of taking a complex issue and breaking it down. Also, the people behind the scenes that do the heavy lifting on this are the real unsung heroes in how we're able to get this accurate information. And it starts perhaps with our CAO, David Edge, and then filters down. But there's also people here in this room, and there are people upstairs doing their job and in other buildings right now that really make this happen. So I wouldn't want to slight anyone by not thanking him for that and make a motion that we approve this.
I second that motion.
I believe this is a roll call, please.
Mr. Linthal.
Aye.
Mr. Asajian.
Aye.
Mr. Ovitt.
Aye.
Mr. Patterson.
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi.
Yes. And thank you all very much.
Special thanks to Nikki Schmidt.
She just pushes Nikki. The buttons.
I thought Jerry was practicing for an Emmy Award speech there.
And I'd like everyone to know we're now on the afternoon session.
You're right in the back.
We're only 5 minutes late now.
Yeah, we're only 5 minutes off. Maybe we go an hour.
Take anything.
May we have an introduction of item C4, please?
Item C4 is a hearing to consider a resolution imposing revised road improvement fees for the San Luis Obispo Fringe Area, 3rd District. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign.
And may we have a staff report, please? Mr. Flynn.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Honorable Board. Dave Flynn with Public Works Department. Today, this is an item to look at the annual update on the circulation for the San Luis Fringe Area and to address the road impact fees. Ryan Chapman with our office will go through the presentation today.
Hi, Ryan Chapman, Public Works. This is the presentation of the San Luis Obispo.
You have to swallow that, Ryan, I'm sorry.
Is the green light on, Ryan, on that speaker?
This is a presentation for the San Luis Obispo Fringe Circulation Study update. This is the vicinity map of the San Luis Obispo Fringe, which is immediately south of the city of San Luis Obispo. In the account at the end of the fiscal year, there was $110,000. During the fiscal year, two permits were pulled, one industrial complex and one single-family dwelling. There was one roadway impact fee appeal in the last year. It was a dioptics development project permit, and your board voted to honor a commitment made by the Planning Commission. This is a map showing projects in the San Luis Obispo Fringe area. The projects include left turn pocket at Santa Fe and Tank Farm routes, widening along Route 227, including a signal at Tank Farm and State Highway 227, and an extension of Buckley Road from Batchel Lane to South Higuera Street. The Buckley Road project is necessary to relieve congestion at Batchel Lane and South Higuera. This is a detailed schematic of the proposed Buckley Road layout. Unlike other fee programs in the county, there are relatively no residential trips in this area, so it is a fee based off of peak hour trip with no pass-by rates. And in the future, there will be reimbursement agreement with the city of San Luis Obispo. And at the time that is ready, that would be brought to your board. The annual update is calculated using a 12 Caltrans 12-month construction cost index. The increase or decrease is applied to the cost of the total projects in the program, and current detailed estimates are used whenever available. This graph shows the increase of the Caltrans construction cost index over the last 20-odd years. As you can see, over the last couple of years, costs have risen considerably, approximately 25% last year. There was an updated estimate for the Buckley Road extension, and that was used, resulting in a total increase of the program of 24.5%, which would raise the fee to $2,691 per peak hour trip. Our recommendation is that your board adopt the annual road impact fee update and adopt the resolution increasing fees.
Are there any questions of staff? Very good. I see no lights, so there are no questions. And I see no one from the public coming forward, so I will simultaneously open and close it to the public and bring it back to the board for discussion, questions, or action. Mr. Lenthal.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If there's no discussion, I'm prepared to make a motion.
Make
no discussion.
No discussion. You're the only light up there. Mr. Ovitz already seconded it.
Then
so
we're
maybe
done.
We have a roll call.
Mr.
Aye.
Mr. Ovitz.
Aye.
Mr. Asajian.
Aye.
Mr. Patterson.
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi.
Yes. Wow. Congratulations. May we have an introduction of item C5, please?
Item C5 is a hearing to consider a resolution authorizing the issuance of water service will serve letters for calendar years 2005 and 2006, County Service Area Number 10, Zone A, Cayucas, 2nd District. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign.
Yes, may we have a staff report, please?
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, and members of the board.
So you get to start over.
Okay. Good afternoon. Madam Chair and members of the board. My name is Courtney Howard. I'm from the Public Works Department. I'm here to request that your board please adopt a resolution that would establish the number of water service will serves to be issued in CSA 10A of Cayucas over the next 2 years. This request is and it relates to the 1993 ordinance that was adopted by your board that limited the number of water will serves to be issued in CSA 10A and required Public Works to come back to your board after analyzing the water supply and recommending a number of water will serves to be issued in subsequent years. This year, the water analysis indicates that there's 40 or water available for 40 dwelling equivalents, and the water will serves would be issued in accordance with the planning department's building allocation waiting list. Those people on that list were surveyed earlier this year, and 17 indicated they'd be ready to go in the first year with their plans to submit for the building permits, and about 23 said they'd be ready to go in the second year. So that would be the 40 that would be issued over the next 2 years. We have been meeting with the Cayucas Citizens Advisory Council, going to their meetings monthly, and meeting with the CSA 10A subcommittee, and we have concurrence on this plan from them. They feel that it's consistent with the growth management ordinance, and we will continue to work with them to come to consensus on the quantity of supplemental water to obtain for the rest of the vacant lots in CSA 10A. So in summary, calculations show that there is water available for these 40 equivalent dwelling units, and we have concurrence from the community to issue those, and we recommend that your board adopt that resolution to establish the number of water will serves to be issued in CSA 10A. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. I have a, well, there's a staff report, okay. Does anybody have, any supervisors have any questions of Courtney? Ms. Howard, excuse me. No questions. So there are no members of the public coming forward. So I'll open and close it.
Staff's recommendation.
Public. We have a motion, and we have a second.
Second.
Oh, Mr. Lenthal seconded it. May we have a roll call, please?
Mr. Asajian?
Aye.
Mr. Lenthal?
Aye.
Mr. Ovitz?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mrs. Bianchi?
Yes. And that concludes our morning and afternoon session this afternoon. So with that, we stand adjourned, and we will come back next Tuesday at 9 a.m.